when you're strange. No one remembers your name when you're strange. When you're strange, when you're strange. People are strange when you're a stranger. Places look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down. When you're strange, faces come out of the rain. When you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange.
Let's talk about something important.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
What we've got here is...
It's a little game of show and tell. You don't want to show me nothing, but you tell me everything.
The jig is up. A communist, fascist, progressive, an evil, mind-controlling, symbol-ridden, living, breathing evil...
Oh, that is a violent, odious lie.
Well, sir, while I may not agree with what you say, I'll defend to the death your right to say it.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Julene.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Hi, Julene.
Hello, Peter.
That's a new introduction.
Yes, finally.
Thank you, Stephanie, for putting that together. You know, one of the reasons I like that you know, the old one. Well, think I should have my headphones up a little louder.
A little feedback.
Yeah, I like to really be in the middle of it all. Anyway, is because we had that other one with John Lennon, Power to the People,
yep.
And what's the guy that does The Revolution Starts Now? Of course, I always forget his name. He's a great singer.
I don't know.
Anyway, don't write us or call us.
Let's go forward.
Well, I was going to say, the revolution, you know, the only people talking about the revolution now are like these right-wingers, right?
The baggers.
The baggers. The tea baggers are talking about revolution. And right-wing revolution is the big F word. Fascism.
Yeah.
But hey, we went to a concert last night, didn't we?
Yes. We saw La Boheme.
Yeah. That was going to shock you. We thought we were rocking out. You know, now we'll see who. Oh, the Cult is coming to the Fillmore. Yeah.
Nice.
All of a sudden I'm reading. Yes. Oh, hello. Yeah. So this is La Boheme. This was this very famous opera written in the late
1890s.
Yeah. And
all in Italian.
Yeah. But it had these.
Which most were.
Surtitles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're surtitles?
Yeah, not subtitles. Oh, so okay. They're up above it. So you could actually tell what's going on.
Which is helpful. Now, and people like opera. This is the riff. What are you talking about? Well, I have to say that it would appeal to the riff listener in that there is partying going on, there's mm-hmm. some alcohol, there's some kind of sexual a yeah. lot of sexual overtones, and I think at the time it was considered rock.
Yeah, well, I think it would be tough if people are like solely into just rock and roll and conceive of opera as just
yeah.
like that,
but it was,
they wouldn't be able to handle it.
It was very telling of times now, because times are hard for a lot of people. People are struggling. More people than ever are starving in our own country. And this is an example of a bunch of artists who were living in poverty in
1890s in Paris.
1890s, yeah.
Yeah, and if let me put it this way. If you can tolerate, and most of us can,
opera.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh,
by
sure.
Queen,
yeah.
Then you could do this.
Yes, you can. I agree.
If you couldn't do that, then forget it. But it's at the Detroit Opera House, and it's going to be there. Oh, man, we gotta find that. Oh, yeah, through the 21st, and you can just look it up online and find out if you're interested in that kind of music.
If not, see it at the Cult.
Yeah,
unless
right.
It has already happened, Peter. You may be reading an old one.
Let's see.
I hope you're not.
The Cult, the 19th.
Oh,
yeah.
Tomorrow.
Uh-huh. No, it's not tomorrow.
Wait, oh, no, the 19th is in a week. What day is this? Where are we? What are we talking about? This is a political talk show.
All right, it's a political talk show. Actually, it is a show about us, about our lives, about our communities, about our beliefs. And we're going to give ours in a pretty strong way. And we would encourage you to pick up the phone, call 313-298-WRIF, which is?
It's 313-298-9743.
One of the things, and we'll get to this in a minute, I want to encourage, this is going to throw you for a loop, and I'll tell you why in a second.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I want to encourage as many of you smokers as possible to keep on smoking.
Oh, Peter.
You gotta do it. You gotta keep on smoking. Don't quit. Don't even
why?
Think about
what
it.
What are you talking
we'll
about?
We'll get to that a little later.
All right.
If you'd like to email us, it's calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Give the Facebook rap, please.
And, yes, we have a Facebook fan page. So just go to your Facebook account and search for Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan and be our fan. Be a friend.
And in a way.
And share. I've opened up things on that page a little bit.
You have.
So you can share articles and things like that. Of course, I have the right to delete, but, you know,
and,
you can try.
and somehow, fan is not really normally the category that we would put listeners and people that appreciate this show. But that's the designation of Facebook, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
And I can look at the first page of it.
Oh, I know, Peter.
I've seen some people.
I know you're looking at it.
Yeah, well, I can't go into it.
Right.
Because I don't belong to it. All right, here is the deal as well. The thing about smoking, that would be the kind of titillating talk show topic that would get people rushing for the phone. But as I've said before, we get lots of really great ratings, and we've got thousands and thousands of people listening. But the reason that Riff sets this up is because it's what's called a public affairs show. And we talk about those issues that, as I said, that concern us as a people, whether it is...
As a community, as a country, as a state.
Neighborhood, community,
right.
All of that stuff. So, and oftentimes I think, wow, man, are they going to talk about the economy? How boring. And
it's a little more interesting to people these days,
yeah,
I have to say. I think people are understanding and paying a little more attention.
We do not pay attention to the economy at our peril. And we do not pay attention to the real motivations of the people, the politicians that claim they're going to represent us, or anybody else that claims they're going to represent us at our own peril. Because we could be at a critical crossroads. I joke sometimes about that either we've got to launch a resistance to what's going on, or we might as well just thatch our roofs and admit that we're peasants, or I say that we're going to wind up in 20 years with what I call the Guatemala model or the Mexican model, where about a third of the population is well-waged and consumes what we take for granted as a middle-class standard of living. But the other two-thirds suddenly are going to be below that.
Well, and most in extreme poverty.
And it's starting to happen.
Yeah.
We can see it. The edges are fraying, and the edges are beginning to, if you see the big circle, it's the circle is beginning to erode all the more. So, that said, and we will talk about why I was encouraging people to keep smoking. You can hear.
So unlike you.
I know, but
I know
you can hear.
A catch.
I can talk even with my tongue in my cheek, but I can do this.
Can't wait, Peter.
Now, Obama put into motion something called the Deficit Reduction Commission. The reason that this was done is because suddenly the United States is this enormous debtor nation. It was caused primarily by two things that are that George W. Bush and Republicans are responsible for. One was the war that, of course, never had to occur in Iraq. And the other thing is the tax cuts for the wealthy. So, again, 2000, or when Bush enters office after having stolen the 2000 election, he has a surplus. He leaves office. There's this huge deficit. He's introduced legislation to bail out the banks, the insurance companies, and what have you, to forestall a collapse of the economic system itself, both in this country and perhaps worldwide. They were, quote, too big to fail. You've heard that 1,000 times. Unfortunately, at this juncture, I think that probably was necessary. As much as it galls me to think that this was the case, but this the cause of it does not go back either to George Bush, or doesn't, although he bears great responsibility, as I said, or certainly not to Barack Obama. The causes of all this are endemic to the system, to a lot of the protections that were rolled back, and if you put a name on it, it's Reaganomics. The idea was that unfettered capitalism. We had that in the 19th century. So people struggled for about 100 years to tame this voracious beast that ate up people. I mean, literally ate up people and spit them out, destroyed tens of millions of lives in order to accumulate capital in the form of profits for the wealthiest. Finally, after thousands of deaths, actually, if you talked about the deaths that came about because of working conditions and, no health care available, right, and all that, I mean, it really comes into like perhaps the tens of millions of people that sacrificed finally to get a middle class, to get the bare minimums of safety nets, of everything from Social Security and the right to organize unions and 5-day weeks. And an 8-hour day. Remember, even 100 years ago, people were being shot down in the street because of the temerity to ask for an 8-hour day. So right now, we're starting to, cycle back into that.
Chipping away at that middle class. And
So here is this Deficit Reduction Commission that comes about. It puts forth.
It's not good.
Well, it depends on who you are.
Yeah, right.
If you're in 98% of us, it's awful. If you're in the top 2% who've been making out literally like bandits, who in fact are bandits, who loot the economy, loot our labor, loot the wealth that the majority of us create. And I say the 98%, then 90% of us represents, well, guess what? 90% of the country, right? If you want to jump in on any of this discussion, Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on Night Call, 313-298-WRIF.
Feel free, 313-298-9743. The one thing that scared me the most about this plan is the gradual increase of the retirement age for Social Security benefits. So people will have to wait another, 4 years to the age of 69 by 2075. But
right. Well, let me go at it like this. The New York Times, which everybody thinks of as this liberal publication, and it is liberal, particularly on social issues and things about the war, although it was part of the war propaganda machine in 2003. But it is pure corporate financial sector oriented. So they say, the draft proposal by the chairman of President Obama's Deficit Reduction Commission was a welcome antidote to the low-minded debate that has dominated the midterm elections, blah, blah, blah. But it frankly acknowledges what most politicians are too cowardly to admit, that deficit reduction, here's the key phrase, and hold on to your pocketbook, folks, that here, let me restart that sentence again because it's extraordinarily important. It frankly acknowledges what most politicians are too cowardly to admit, that deficit reduction will require shared sacrifice. Hey.
Meaning,
put your hand on your wallet because they're coming for your money. If you've got a job and you haven't been cut back into a lesser salary and what have you, they're coming for that as well. Now, here's what I'm talking about. For one thing, we didn't all create this, so I don't know why we all should share the sacrifice. the people that created the situation in the first place, the warmongers and the financiers, the people that profited from the wars where working class and middle class sons and daughters died, whereas our tax money went for this absolutely unnecessary war in Iraq, that's who should be paying it all. And that's who benefited from it. And the idea that there should be a required shared sacrifice is something I just can't get ready for. Somebody I had on the show, one of my interviews that I did, was Professor Richard D. Wolfe. You can go to R.D. Wolfe with two F's, rdwolfe.com. He's got a handle on all this. Obama's Deficit Reduction Commission released a remarkable document this week. Under the cover of deficit reduction, the document lists a host of proposed reductions in Social Security and Medicare payments. So remember, we always had the idea that we were going to actually improve our material circumstances. Now, it's one thing. I mean, that we should all have, instead of two cars, seven cars, or that we should all have, you know, three wristwatches or four, you know, people do have four televisions. But, you know, 14 televisions and all. I'm not talking about that. But that we should have, I can't remember these off the top of my head. Franklin Delano Roosevelt had the four freedoms, and one of them was freedom from want. Can you imagine being 70 years old and worried that your Social Security benefits are going to be cut, or your Medicare benefits are going to be cut? Mm-hmm. That you're going to take, instead of your blood pressure medicine, instead of taking it all, you're going to cut it in half because you can't afford the copay?
Or you can't take the medicine at all. You can't get the medicine at all.
Yeah. So that's what they're talking about, proposed reductions in Social Security and Medicare payments. And you think, what do I care? I'm 17 years old, or I'm 27 years old. Who cares? You know, in France, remember what just happened? These huge general strikes. The country
or the education system
was
well,
brought to a stop. Yeah. There's a whole fight back going on in Europe. Here in the United States, it's just pathetic. We just say, yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Right. Like that.
It's really pathetic.
Yeah,
really
sure
pathetic.
Is.
But anyway, in France, that they wanted to raise the age of retirement, and tens of thousands of high school students came out to protest this.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it?
Part of it, I'm sure, was concern for their parents and their grandparents, and part of it was they had some idea what's happening in life, you know, that you go through it. Maybe you're 17 at one point, but suddenly you're 57 and 67.
They also have role models that this is something that happens, especially in Paris, but in France, you know, there are protests. There are mass protests, and there have been for a long time.
Sure. They also recommended, this is the Deficit Reduction Commission, and the New York Times says we should have a shared sacrifice to get the deficit down. Well, they want to put a rise in the tax on oil products. And I was trying to do, maybe I've even lowballed this, but came out that the tax, if you drive like 20,000 miles a year, you get 20 miles a gallon, you use 600 gallons. They were talking about a 15 cent per gallon rise in federal gasoline tax. If I'm doing my math right, it must be. It couldn't be $900. So it'd be like $90 a year more.
Mm-hmm.
You go, well, you know.
It all adds up.
If you're making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 and up, another $90, big deal, right? If you're making $18,000 a year, that $90 is sometimes, you know, when you're scrambling to get the rent or some other necessity.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So that cuts in public employment, including the military, which is never going to happen unless there's the political will that's enforced upon them. Multi-year year wage freezes for public employees, cutting foreign military bases. Now, that would be good, although I can't imagine it's going to happen. Reduce tax deductions, which effectively raises tax on the middle class. So you wouldn't have these, you couldn't write off the tax that you pay on, you know, your property, not your property, you know, on your mortgage.
Oh, right.
On your mortgage. So this isn't, where's the shared sacrifice here? Where's the rich? What are they going to sacrifice? I don't get this. Reduce basic income taxes on individuals and businesses, which would mean, again, the rich. So this is what we're looking at. This is the shared sacrifice. We didn't create the problem. You and I didn't do it. The wealthy did. And the wealthy benefited from all of this. They benefit from the war. This is a military-industrial complex, and it has a cultural component in it that, you know, we think that wars usually are just great, although they haven't been working out real well in the last several. But it doesn't matter to the economy, because what you got to do is just keep producing this stuff, keep finding enemies, enlarge the threat always, and then use this stuff up with a war every once in a while, and then you build more, right? That's real easy. Real easy to do.
Quite the cycle, isn't it?
Yeah. So they're also talking about cutting funding to the National Park Service, cutting funding to the public broadcasting system, and what have you. Now, our favorite columnist, am I correct? Frank Rich in the New York Times.
Oh, sure.
His column today says, "Who will stand up to the super rich?" And he's talking about the elections, too, and who really came out winning. You got to remember that these teabaggers voted for freedom, smaller government, and lower taxes. Well, you're not going to get any of that.
Yeah,
believe
I don't even
it.
Know if they know what that means.
Yeah, believe it. You're not going to get any of that. You were sold a bill of goods. If you voted for these people on the basis of that, you're really dumb. Because they don't mean it. I mean, a few of them may. A few of them may, right? Okay. But they're going to get pushed aside.
And if so, we'll hear about it.
Yeah.
Sure.
They're going to get pushed aside because there's really only a few. I'm really the ones that got elected were these corporatists. But here's what Frank Rich says in today's New York Times. "The wealthy Americans we should worry about are the ones who implicitly won the election, those who take far more from America than they give back. They were not on the ballot, and most of them are not household names. There's no one in Washington in either party with the fortitude to try to stop them from grabbing anything that's not nailed down, because there's not restrictions on them. And when there's not restrictions on the capitalists, that is the people that own the majority of everything." You know, George Carlin, they own you. What am I talking about? Go Google that after the show.
Yeah,
right. I had to put that on my website.
Make a list of things to look up after.
They own you, George or Carlin. Just put that in. Listen to his rave.
It's a good one.
But Frank Rich says, "The Americans I'm talking about are not just those showy, anonymous corporate campaign contributors who flooded this campaign, put in hundreds of millions of dollars to elect people that, what, wanted more freedom, smaller government, and lower taxes." This was all, you know, dumped on the
less
the
restriction, right. All of it.
No, that's not what they want. They want less restrictions on them,
yeah,
which means more profits for them and a worse environment and lower wages and less protections for all of us, less benefits, everything like that. He said, "No less triumphant were those individuals at the top of the economic pyramid, the super rich, who have gotten spectacularly richer over the last four decades while their fellow citizens either treaded water or lost ground. The top 1% of American earners took 23.5% of the nation's pre-tax income in 2007, up from less than 9% in 1976. So in 1976, the top 1% had 9% of the pre-tax income. After a generation, and some of this was begun under Carter. Let's not, you know, it's really nice and fashionable to really put it all on Reagan and Reaganomics. But Reaganomics is in many ways shared by both parties, most aggressively and currently by the Republicans, though, to be sure. So now almost a quarter of the income in the United States is hogged by the ultra-rich. There's an old saying, if you want to drink clean, clear water, you got to get the hog out of the stream. Well, now the hog's got his fat ass sitting right in the middle of that water, and it's besotting it beyond belief. And what are we going to do? Are we going to fight back, or are we going to just say, yes, sir, or are we going to put these whack job teabaggers in there that are just, I don't know, I mean, they're so clueless. Anyway,
a big lesson will be learned after this.
During the boom years of 2002 to 2007, that top 1%'s pre-tax income increased an extraordinary 10% every year. But the boom proved an elusive affair. In that same period, the median income for non-elderly American households went down. The average, or the median, you know, that's the one right in the middle. And you got to remember, if somebody's making $1 billion a year and you're making $18,000 a year, they average that, right?
Yes, they do.
Yeah. And the poverty rate rose, of course. Let's see. It's the very top earners, not your garden varieties, entrepreneurial multimillionaires who will be by far the largest beneficiaries if there's an extension of the expiring Bush-era tax cuts for over $200,000 a year for individuals. You know that? There are these tax breaks that are supposed to expire for everyone. That was one of the things that happened, too. We all got tax breaks. The ultra-rich, and you and I. And did you notice how your income went up significantly? Gee, neither did I.
No, not at all.
So you and I got a little teeny bit, right, to the point where great numbers of Americans think they're paying more taxes than they did. All right? But and Obama actually put in more as well. Incredibly, the top 1% of Americans now have tax rates a third lower than the same top percentile had in 1970. So we're getting this 40 years ago, they paid, well, I can't do it backwards, but now the top 1%, the richest people in America, the ones that use the teabaggers as their cannon fodder, who wouldn't even let you in their club, who would laugh at you behind your back because of your bumpkin ways, you go out and vote for them.
I know.
Yeah.
You know, also in the article, they mentioned, Frank Rich mentioned a name I hadn't thought of or heard for a while, Joe the Plumber.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever happened to that guy?
I don't know. He was actually up in Alaska for that.
He's still around.
Yeah, that Joe Miller. All right.
Oh,
well,
geez.
Here, and yeah, I should have. I didn't have this ready to go. Never mind, so I won't do it. Okay, so the teabaggers vote for freedom, smaller government, lower taxes, and so they got Dan Coats in. And you're familiar with Dan Coats, right? Isn't he from Indiana? Let me see. All of a sudden, he's a Republican from Indiana. He was a former senator and ambassador to Germany.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yes, 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 yes.
And so
lobbyist and then not lobbyist. And,
right,
yeah.
Right. So he was one of the teabagger favorites, and he got in Indiana because the majority, wasn't that there was a big sweep and change of opinion, is that just all the Obama voters got discouraged. 39 million Obama voters stayed home. I mean, that's the way the cookie crumbles. That's the way the cookie crumbles.
Oh,
right?
Oh, my gosh.
But here's the story. Here's the baggers. Here's who you got in there. When Cooper Industries, a century-old manufacturing company based in Texas, moved its headquarters to Bermuda to slash its American income tax bill, and, of course, its wages of its employees as well, it had to turn to a Washington insider with extraordinary contacts to soothe a seething Congress. In other words, people in Congress were pissed. Here was this firm going to just leave all these jobs in Texas and take them to Bermuda, right? And plus not contribute to American taxes. So Dan Coats was a former senator, and when he was in the Senate, he served as the co-chair of a team – or no, now, sorry – when that happened, he served as the co-chair of a team of lobbyists in 2007 who worked behind the scenes to successfully block Senate legislation that would have terminated a tax loophole worth hundreds of millions of dollars in additional cash flow to Cooper Industries. So, by the way, I hope you realize this is all about, and this is, you know, these right-wingers go crazy about this phrase, distribution of income. It's what it's all about all the time. So here was the possible distribution of income. Either that money could come into the general fund of the United States for corporate taxes, or it could go to the already ultra-rich people in the Cooper Industries, facilitated by this darling of the teabaggers, this now Senator Coats from Indiana. As part of the Republican wave in this year's midterm election, Coats will join the Senate again, and he's seeking a coveted spot on the Finance Committee.
Oh, my gosh.
The same panel that tried to shut the loophole and that the Obama administration has passed to again consider such a move. There's no rule that would keep Mr. Coats from voting on issues that he handled as a lobbyist, but he does not intend to excuse himself when former clients are affected by his votes. But he has said he will not let prior connections influence him. Well, I think we have to take him at his word, don't you?
Oh, my.
Dumbass.
Yeah.
But, yeah, absolutely. Oh, my gosh, this story's a nightmare, Peter.
Coates' blue-chip list of 36 clients included corporate titans like General Electric and Google. These companies routinely have major legislative issues pending in Congress and the Senate Finance Committee that Mr. Coates will now be asked to vote on, often with great consequences to their bottom line. Yeah.
Depressing.
So if you voted for the
racket.
Yeah, if you voted for these people, you're a dumbass. What
you
more
heard
can
it
you
here first.
Because you voted against your own interests, you're cutting your own throat. I mean, are you really that dumb?
Peter.
A big yes, I hear.
Yeah, we are. Because we want smaller government. We want more freedom.
Don't tread on me.
Yeah, don't tread on me. I'm going to elect Dan Coates. Because he's for freedom.
That's right.
And lack, you know, no more. Get rid of the restrictions.
Do you think they talk like that?
Yeah,
why do we put it in that voice?
That is class prejudice.
We're a little judgmental.
That's class prejudice, I think. But you know what? Some of the smartest people I know in the world I've ever come in contact with are poor people and working class people.
You betcha.
And some of the dumbest.
Oh, I said you betcha.
Of course, some of the rich people I've known have been some of the dumbest as well. And meanest.
Yeah, it goes across all
class probably
levels.
So. Yeah. There's something here in Michigan called the Mackinac Center, and it's this far right wing. Well,
it sounds so nice.
Yeah, they're called a think tank, but
it's your fudge. And
what they're thinking about is how they can give the sort of the intellectual justification for further looting of the populace and what have you. So now they're all, they're all just excited. Yeah, because
titillated
because we have these Republicans running things in Michigan now, and so they've put out a piece of, it's called a blueprint for reform. Environmental regulation in Michigan. Guess what? They're against environmental regulation.
Of course they are.
Right. So here again, this is the blackmail. This is the capitalist blackmail, the usual blackmail that they always have, because they're saying there is no more important reform to enable the private sector to create jobs in Michigan than overhauling the state's what they call dysfunctional environmental regulatory system. So here's your choice, dear listeners. Would you like a clean environment or would you like a job? Are you willing to just suck up poison water and air and chemicals in your in the food you eat, or do you want a job? Which will it be?
That's what they're going to say.
Yeah, and the idea that it's probably true. There's another thing that we should do. We should here in Michigan, we should try to get out from under the federal minimum wage. So then, if Michigan could offer
a workforce
working for $1.75 an hour.
Oh, I see where you're going here.
Yeah, $1.75 an hour and have no environmental regulations and probably no wage and hour regulations at all. Man, I'll bet you industry and businesses would flock here.
Things would just, yeah.
They would come from India.
Yeah.
They would come from China. They would come from Bangladesh because that's why they went there. Because there's none of those government restrictions there.
Yeah.
Those
damn
bitches,
things.
You know? Yeah, trying to ruin the economy by paying people a fair wage and overtime and health care and stuff like that. And remember last week I said there's only one fly in the ointment, if you will, about outsourcing jobs. When they manufacture things overseas, over in China, say, or Vietnam, they have to ship it back here and the shipping costs, right? So if they could replicate the working conditions and the wage structures and no benefits and no environmental protections here in Michigan, well, what the hell? They'd be coming back here.
Please, no!
All right. The other thing is why you should keep smoking when we come back.
Oh, geez.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that now it's more important than ever to buy an American-made vehicle. We at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing and want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new Lincoln MKS, the sleek Lincoln MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the Lincoln MKX, Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. We encourage you to check out our virtual showroom on our website, Demmer.com. You can check out our vehicle inventory, and you can bet that if we don't have the vehicle you're in the market for, we'll do our very best to get it for you. While you're online, we invite you to get a no-obligation internet price quote. Whether you come into our newly renovated dealership or visit us online, we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury invite you to experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood and Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're two payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back to another segment of this broadcast you'd never know is a phone-in talk show because...
Yeah, let the people speak, Peter.
We've been raving.
We. Yeah. Yeah, what's in your pocket?
Hey, by the way, besides these people that were elected to office when all the Democrats stayed home, there was also some genuine nutbags, like this guy, let me see, what's his name? Representative John Shimkus from Illinois. And, you know, we're worried about the environment, right? But he says that, don't worry, he refers to the Bible and God on the issue of global warming.
Oh, okay.
He insists we shouldn't be concerned about the planet being destroyed because God promised Noah it wouldn't happen again after the Great Flood.
Oh, my gosh.
This is who you elected!
Are we going back to this again? Are we really doing this?
Yeah.
or is he? We.
I just can't understand. I can't believe, you know, that these people are on the same planet. Yeah. He said, as long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night will never cease.
Okay.
This is what he said. And, John?
You cannot petition the Lord with prayer!
He said, I believe that it is the infallible word of God, and that's the way it's going to be for his creation. So we can, you know, get rid of all those democratic environmental controls, all those communist inspired things.
Who voted for this guy?
Yeah.
Gee.
People in Illinois.
Yeah, Illinoising.
Patricia writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. This is a great site that we used to use all the time, and I haven't been to it in years. DemocraticUnderground.com. DemocraticUnderground.com.
So it is a great site.
We refer to it, I didn't get this at first, as the Cat Food Commission. This is the Deficit Reduction Committee.
That we talked about at the top of the hour.
Yeah, so you know what that means? That's what we're all going to be eating.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. All right.
Well, actually, some of it looks kind of
all right, Chuck
good.
And Alicia and Tom, stay on the line, and I'll get to you. I want to tell you why you should keep on smoking. Let me just give you some other cigarette news, though. This is from the New York Times today as well. As sales to developing nations become ever more important to giant tobacco companies, they are stepping up efforts around the world to fight tough restrictions on the marketing of cigarettes. Well, some of their best customers, about 450,000 of them, die every year. So they need replacement customers, right? Companies like Philip Morris International and British American Tobacco are contesting limits on ads in Britain, bigger health warnings in South America, and higher cigarette taxes in the Philippines and Mexico. They're also spending billions with a B, on lobbying and marketing campaigns in Africa and Asia, and in one case provided undisclosed financing for TV commercials in Australia. So they're trying to addict people, you would think.
Well, they do a pretty good job of it.
Yeah.
They're very successful.
Yeah, well, you would think that just the fact that there are people out there that don't smoke that are trying to addict you would be a real impetus to quit, but don't quit. This is very important that you keep smoking. The industry has ramped up efforts in advance of a gathering in Uruguay this week of public health officials from 171 nations who plan to shape guidelines to enforce a global anti-smoking treaty. Cigarette companies are aggressively recruiting new customers in developing nations to replace those who are quitting or dying in the United States and Europe, where smoking rates have fallen considerably. Worldwide cigarette sales are rising 2% a year. Hmm. Now, a lot of the world, of course, is very poor, and people are spending their money on ciggies.
Listen, Pierre, sometimes a smoke just feels good. People don't like to be lectured on cigarettes.
I'm telling them to keep smoking. Keep on smoking.
In a very roundabout way.
Federal drug regulators have announced that they're going to have these 36 proposed warning labels for cigarette packages here in the U.S.
Yeah.
One showing a shoe tag or toe tag on a corpse, another in which a mother blows smoke on her baby, all these things. I think they have them like that in Canada. Hey, Canada, give us a ring at 313-298-WRIF.
I thought theirs was more in large text, but I'd be curious, yeah.
Yeah. Public health officials hope that the new labels will re-energize the nation's anti-smoking efforts. 20.6% of the nation's adults, or 46.6 million people, are smokers. 3.5 million teenagers are smokers. 1,000 children and teenagers become regular smokers, and 4,000 try smoking for the first time.
And now, when did you have your first smoke, your first lucky
14.
Strike? Yeah.
14.
I was about 12.
And I was hooked.
Yeah, me too.
I was smoked from the time I was 14 until I'm 20. Have I told the story on the air about why?
Full disclosure on your ciggies.
Why I stopped?
I know why.
Because, my...
Your wife demanded you stop.
Well, she wasn't my wife then.
Okay.
But
God, I almost said her name.
Yeah.
Never done that.
No, we don't say that.
We don't do that.
Yeah. But anyway, she she would, you know, like you're both 20 years old and, you know, she's going to kiss me and she would get close. Her lips would almost touch and she'd go, oh, you smell terrible. You got to chew some gum or I'm not kissing you. Well, that was it for me. Anyway, so why should you keep smoking?
That's a strong love, Peter.
Yeah, well,
there's a lot of people out there, and you know who you are. No matter how much your partner, wife, husband wants you to quit, you can't do it. It's, you know, it's the power.
Yeah. Well,
that it has over you.
Michigan in 2008 collected $1.186 billion from cigarette taxes, from state cigarette tax.
Oh.
So if we cut another almost $1.2 billion out of the budget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So keep smoking.
Yeah. But you know, actually, if you start really, of course, I was kidding, if you totaled up the cost, if you socialize the cost, that is, you know, spread it out among all of us, in terms of what we lose, in terms of people that are off sick, the health costs because of people that have the illnesses associated with that, it would be a dead loss. Yeah, and I think you'd actually have cigarette prohibition, because I don't know if I'm advocating necessarily. I don't. But the fact that huge corporations are selling this death-dealing product to people and addicting them isn't real. I don't think they gain the status of a protected activity.
Mm-hmm.
Like marijuana, grow your own, right?
You can distill your own whatever.
Yeah,
moonshine.
Right. All right, so what do you think? Give us a call. Peter Werby, Jalene Jordan, 313-298-WRIF.
It's 313-298-9743.
Yeah, and we'd like some more, I can't call them fans. I mean, we don't want fans in the sense that... Our Facebook page as friends, right? Fellow thinkers, or what I always call you on the air, my partner in thought crime.
Yes.
If you remember 1984.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Let's go.
I mean, I don't really. The year was kind of foggy, but I did read the book.
All right. Here is Chuck. Chuck in Lake Orion. Chuck, thanks for being so patient and staying with us. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much. I just want to go back to the stimulus bill.
Sure.
And I know there's a lot of things that were involved in that bill. Now, that bill, I feel, could have been a lot shorter if there wasn't all those earmarks and all those things that went to different, you know, higher up companies like Amtrak, for example. You know, they got what, like $2 billion out of that, you know? And
wait a minute. You know, there's not a modern industrial country in the world that doesn't subsidize its rail system, and we have one of the worst in the world.
You're not a moneymaker.
Well, listen, neither are the police, neither are the buses, neither, I mean, it's a modern service. I mean, we had a rail system. Well, let me put it to you this way. Would you, Obama just announced that he was going to submit to this blackmail from Israel to give something like 20 planes to Israel if they would agree to stop building these illegal settlements. I mean, was he sort of rewarding crime? I don't understand it.
And I don't even think that, I think they're going to start right back up.
Well, yeah. So, yeah. It's a 90-day moratorium. Right? Yeah. And then, yeah. So I think that was like, so we're giving them $20 billion. Where would you want your $20 billion to go? To go to these fighter jets to Israel or to Amtrak?
Well, I'm not into, well, obviously I'm not a government person, but I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, I believe that bill could have been streamlined a little bit more instead of putting all those earmarks and getting all those lobbyists involved.
I'm sure.
And what they wanted to pack in that thing. And we are the people, and we should be able to have more of an inside vote on what goes into those bills. And I just feel that we're not really getting that fair shake.
Well, I agree with you 100%. And any bill coming out of any legislature, whether it's probably a city council or a state government or whatever, could probably be done better. But you got to remember, the stimulus bill actually, again, was probably one of those things that, well, we know it saved hundreds of thousands of jobs among first responders, police, and fire, and went to teachers and all that. And was there a lot of crap in there? Well, of course. I mean, that's the way they got, people to sign on to it. But, yeah, your point's well taken, and I appreciate it. And here is Alicia in Redford. Am I saying your name correctly?
Yep.
Okay, you're on the air.
Hey, Jillian. Hey, Peter. How are you guys doing?
Hey, good.
You know, when you were talking about the things that they want to cut or add, you know, I never heard anybody mention anything about maybe cutting all these guys in the Senate, maybe cutting their wages a little bit.
You mean about cutting the salaries?
Yeah, like adding 15 cents to the gas tax you guys were talking
right,
about.
Yeah.
15 cents, yeah.
So cut their salaries, yeah, sure. Hey.
Cut their salaries a little bit, even if it's, you know.
Even if it's a step, Peter, that it won't save that much money, even if it's just a statement.
It would make us all feel a lot better.
Right. Well, yeah. I don't know how much those guys get paid, but I'm sure they get paid a lot of money, and the government pays them. Right.
Yeah, and they have huge, right. Particularly the national Congress has
right.
These incredible benefits.
Oh, they have the best health care
so
anywhere.
If they want to save money, cut their
Well, you know what, Alicia? If we turned everything over to committees of citizens, and I think that's what the caller before he was talking about, that the people's concerns don't really get met. Like I was saying, where do you want $20 billion in fighter jets to go to Israel? Or would you like to have, I don't know, take some of our cities? Like I just read this thing about Camden, New Jersey. They're going to have to lay off half their police force and half their fire department.
Awful.
The whole city is a wreck. I mean, or what about something a little more, well, I don't know why this is more direct. Maybe that's more direct. But something like creating a national rail system that takes people around in the manner that you can go all over Europe with. And that's what we could use the money for. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. Some open lines for you. Here's Tom in Detroit. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I was just wondering, how much does WRIF charge you for your random drug test?
You mean you think I'm high, man?
Everybody. It's drug testing is the standard.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, let me ask you this.
I don't understand the
question. Well, I don't know. I'm not sure whether he meant I was.
They don't drug test us here.
Wait. How many DJs do you think would be left in the country if they drug tested DJs? Huh?
No, I just, you know, I look in this job market nowadays, and it is insane. The drug testing is just over the top. What I'm waiting for now is for them to start charging you for your drugs. Take it out of your paycheck.
Thank you for clarifying.
I thought you meant by what I was saying, you thought I must have high on drugs.
No.
Okay. They actually charge. They charge you for
$1.75 an hour, and then $2 a week for your drug test. Out of your check.
You're kidding me. wait a minute. All right, Tom.
This is where we're going.
Wait. But that's not happening now.
Well, wait. Just wait a while.
If you get in trouble with the law, then they charge you for your drug test.
Yeah. Oh, you read about that, huh?
No, I know someone who got into some trouble, but got a drunk driving, and they, even though they found no drugs in the system or anything like that, he has long hair, so I think they judged him.
They will do then.
These cons, they talk this personal responsibility, and you can go to an employer with an impeccable employment record and just nothing, just clean and able,
mm-hmm.
but you got to pee in that cup, and...
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. I'm just venting, man.
Venting's fine here.
That's what it's all set up for.
Yep.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate your call. Venters of the world unite. Yes. Ranters of the world unite.
Yes, and call in.
One of the things that happened, people say that during the election, that the progressives just got blown away, blown out of the water.
But they really didn't.
No, they didn't at all. There was 83 people in the Progressive Caucus. 80 of them were reelected. Of what's called the Blue Dogs, and these are the conservatives, the conservative Democrats, who call themselves Democrats only through a grave misunderstanding of the term, the conservative Democrats who voted against the health care bill, voted like Republicans. They lost half of their caucus. But this guy, Heath Shuler, who apparently was a first-round 1994 NFL draft by the Washington Redskins, but didn't do well, he's a Democratic congressman. He got reelected this time in the 11th District of North Carolina, and he says that the reason this all happened was because the Democrats were too liberal. I don't get it. All the liberal Democrats got reelected. All of his pals got submerged because people say, well, we already got, why not elect a real Republican? But get this. Here's his statement. The Democrats' achievements in the last Congress, Mr. Shuler said, are unpopular with the public because the party's leadership, Democratic Party's leadership, has been too reflexively partisan. He says a more moderate approach is needed. He thinks the Democrats were too partisan as opposed to the Republicans Obama now talking about, well, maybe we can make a compromise or something like that. Shake hands with the devil is, what I would say. And in fact, this was from last week. I said that Obama was a weenie. And Winston Smith, speaking of 1984, wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. You called Obama a weenie, but that's putting it rather gently. Obama's not simply timid. He is a calculating corporatist, which is why he allowed the Bush crime family to walk away with impunity, and why we left the professional and clerical infrastructure of the Bush administration intact, and why he appointed Rahm Emanuel as chief of staff, and why he appointed Reuben Geithner and Summers to put Band-Aids on the economy they helped to damage, and why, in spite of the many crimes perpetrated during the Bush reign, there hasn't been a single investigation or prosecution, and why he's done nothing to compromise with people whom he knows very well would like to lynch him. Obama's primary concern is avoiding stepping on the toes of any person or entity that could interfere with his plans after he leaves office. I'm convinced that Obama will be perfectly content with one term. For him, the presidency has been a stepping stone to what?
Yeah, right. Tell us.
Winston Smith said, I'd like to see Dennis Kucinich succeed him in 2012. Well, so would I. But I don't think there's much of a chance. I could get this guy to write scripts for me.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
When I say scripts, that's kind of, I mean, scripts we'd read on the air, not prescriptions.
Right. Yes, right, okay. Yes.
Yeah.
David wrote in, Peter, and he says, I told you, people don't like to be given speeches about smoking.
Yeah.
And I, David, said, you know what, sometimes it's a stress reliever and it feels good. And he said, I bet y'all that you'd be one of those who'd grovel for a butt. B-U-T-T, cigarette, so as to find some mental relief from your own effing hell. He says, try dealing with providing for the family, loss of home, death of pet, kids, and it all. So, love you both, but light me up.
Well, you're killing yourself.
And Peter.
Yeah, all right. I mean, well, I'm concerned. I mean, that. I mean, the majority of people that smoke want to quit. I mean, it's a financial draw. Most of the people that smoke now are working class or poor. You go to poor markets, and they sell cigarettes individually, or you can buy five, mm-hmm. which is illegal, but it's done all over these little markets.
Yep.
And what have you. And what is a pack of cigarettes cost now?
$6 to $7.
Wow. And are people still smoking a pack a day? People used to smoke like two packs a day.
Or three. No, the real hardcore. I knew someone who smoked three packs a day.
Yeah. No, that's... That's incredible. Well, but one of the things is, too, the Democratic achievement in the last Congress, according to this blue dog. You know what a yellow dog Democrat is?
Oh, you know, I've known this.
These are keeps
popping in and out of the show.
They don't use that anymore, but it's more like, I don't think anybody called themselves, but there was an old saying in the South that said if the Democrats put up a yellow dog, they'd vote for.
Oh, yeah, yes. And then explain, because a lot of people don't even know what a blue dog
Democrat is. Blue dog is a conservative Democrat. I'm not sure where this...
Where it came from.
Yeah.
Will let us know.
Let us know. But anyway, this blue dog Democrat, Congressman Shuler, says that the party's leadership was too reflexively partisan. He says a more moderate approach is needed, and that the party is unpopular because of that. But... Again, we go back to these things. Like people, a lot of people disagree with the health plan. Jillian and I disagree with lots of aspects mm-hmm. of it, but
we want one.
Yeah, we want more of one.
Yes,
we want a more comprehensive one. In fact, one that ensures everybody. But here, also the last Congress under Nancy Pelosi. Remember that guy that said, "I said, well, what's wrong with Nancy Pelosi?" And he said, "She's an idiot."
That's all he had. Yeah,
well, thank you.
Do you know how many conservatives are happy she's out of there?
Yeah. But they had bills passed and signed that made college loans more affordable. They had the Cash for Clunkers thing, which helped rejuvenate the auto industry. They had new consumer protections for credit card users, made it easier for women to challenge pay discrimination, increased federal regulation of tobacco products, cracked down on waste in the Pentagon, gave business tax incentive to hire unemployed workers, and tax credits for first-time homeowners. Wow. Wow. Yeah.
There's something.
There's something, yeah. Let's do this. Take a break. Oh, let me see how many. Oh, we only have a couple commercials. So maybe we could real quickly take a call. And there still are open lines at 313-298-WRIF. And here is Tim in Ypsilanti. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
We're good.
Kudos to the opening arguments. I really appreciate somebody bring out the Tea Party in a more fashion. That's kind of got me fired up, really, because economically, socially, I fit in that Tea Party background. I see a lot of them around me, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm working class, southern roots, not to try to paint with a broad brush of the racism aspect of it, but it's there, and it's appalling to me because I see people turning on things that have helped us become great middle class and have turned our backs on it. You know, things that came along with FDR.
Sure.
The biggest reason I picked up the phone is when the first caller came on and said the stimulus rate, we could have made it smaller. Well, isn't that what the stimulus was supposed to be, was inject money in so to save jobs at Amtrak?
Yeah,
to
sure.
Save jobs at GM? You know, my dad was against the health care bill. I was for it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he collects Medicare, retired from GM. It appalls me because he's turning his back on me and his grandkids by supporting it. You know, being on that Tea Party wagon.
And that is tough when your parents support something that doesn't support their own kid. I have a couple of situations like that with my parents, and it is really upsetting.
And a union man should know better. I mean, Walter Reuther tried, one of the first presidents of the United Auto Workers, tried to get a health care plan in over 50 years ago. All right, Tim, thank you very much. I got to take a break right now. We'll be right back, and I'm going to say, George W. Bush has a memoir out.
Oh, yeah, I watched him on Oprah. Why, and, how did I put myself through that?
Hey, he confessed to a war crime.
He did.
He did. We'll be right back to talk about it. If you're on the line, stay there and we'll get your call.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Did you know that 65% of U.S. homes are under-insulated? So don't miss Lowe's insulation event going on right now. Purchase qualifying in-stock Johns Manville formaldehyde-free fiberglass insulation and get a Lowe's gift card worth up to $200 via mail-in rebate. Plus, insulation purchases before the end of the year qualify for a tax credit up to $1,500. So head over to Lowe's now or shop at Lowe's.com. Experience. Lowe's. Let's build something together. Offer valid now through December 13th. Some restrictions apply. See store for details. Valid in U.S. only.
Time's running out. You're maxed out on your credit cards. The collection calls are coming every day, and now you're two payments behind on your mortgage. Every time you turn on the radio, there's some cheerful couple telling you how they got out of debt overnight. Their stress is gone, and everything's just wonderful. Come on. The truth is, what sounds too good to be true is too good to be true. You need real help, and you need it now. Not bankruptcy. That should be your last choice. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're the attorney-driven program, dedicated to helping you get out of debt in months instead of years, saving you thousands, and without risking your family home. We know what we're doing, and we don't make promises we can't keep. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Get out of debt. Call Credit Card Relief at 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
101 WRIF. NWRIF HD1 Detroit.
Jolene, you're listening to Night Call, the Ritz award-winning talk show on 101 WRIF.
Hi, welcome back to our second hour. Thanks for joining us. It's midnight, at least here in the East. GMT minus what, 5? We always get into that.
I think that's it.
Yeah. You listen to the BBC, the British broadcast.
GMT.
And they always talk about GM. They say it is, like, right now it's probably 5 a.m. Mm-hmm. It's 5 a.m. GMT.
Yes.
I can just do the math. Right. We're at 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
And we were encouraging people to keep smoking because you're paying a billion, $200 million to the state coffers. Yeah, you know what I didn't do?
You know what? Brian from Windsor wrote in. We were talking about cigarettes and Canada and the packaging that's going to be changing here in the United States.
Yeah.
And apparently, you were right, Peter. For the last 10 to 15 years, they've had pictures with large text descriptions. That's the part I remembered. With lungs with cancer, pregnant women, and a brain cut open showing a tobacco-related death from a stroke. So,
Well, here, from the Tax Policy Center, that must be, and that's their URL, their address on the web, taxpolicycenter.org. In 2008, Americans paid almost $16 billion in cigarette taxes. So the idea that on one hand the government is trying to convince people not to smoke, on the other hand it willingly takes this tax from the poor, is sort of a strange contradiction. All right, George W. Bush.
Oh, he had quite a week last week.
Yeah, he did. He's got a memoir out called Decision Points. And he's kind of making a little bit of a comeback, you know. And people think, well, he's just a good old boy.
He's the same. He's even worse.
You weren't pleased to watch him?
No, it was awful.
Did Oprah or anybody ask him, Matt Lauer ask him, how do you feel about ruining the economy? Anybody throw him a...
No.
Yeah.
No, they were very, very soft on him.
Yeah. Well...
I didn't see Lauer, but I did see part of the Oprah interview.
Did you hear this thing about how Barbara Bush, she had a miscarriage, and she handed him a jar with a just miscarried fetus in it?
I didn't get that. I knew there was something. She did?
I don't understand this.
I thought it was something at a science class or something. But
the scene described by former President George W. Bush in his interview with Matt Lauer of NBC News Monday night, this is what happened. Bush called his mother's action straightforward. Well,
they were his.
I would call
that
it.
That was the baby.
Yeah, the miscarried baby
hers?
In a jar.
You know, she's
a sick puppy.
She's a sick.
And that's why he's so sick.
It really is why. I blame it on Barbara Bush. I really do. And I saw an interview with Barbara Senior and Junior, and she's evil.
Barbara Senior?
Barbara
and
Bush Senior. She's evil. And he has a real complex about her. I could tell. She was mean to him. And I think she drove him to drink.
Why in the world?
But I'm not excusing him for anything.
Why in the world would a mother hand her teenage son a jar containing the remains of a miscarried fetus?
No wonder he's such an insensitive ass. Right?
Yeah. But listen, that kind of pales beyond the fact that that George W. Bush is a war criminal. Besides, just in general, the fact that he knowingly misrepresented and lied about Saddam Hussein having weapons of mass destruction.
Well, he says he now, in his memoirs, he says he was shocked to find out there were none.
How come you and I knew there were no weapons of mass destruction?
I know, but the President of the United States didn't.
Yeah.
It really is amazing to me that we had all of this information.
And
we
knew
it.
And what was that? He said the worst moment of his presidency
was when Kanye said that George Bush doesn't care about black people. Can you believe this?
That was
the worst
moment. Katrina?
Yeah. When Oprah talked about that, it's like he was going to cry.
And you know, he kept calling him Conway.
He did.
I kept calling him Conway.
Oh, jeez. What an idiot.
Well, here, according to Amnesty International, they said that the United States must prosecute George W. Bush for torture if his admission in a memoir that he authorized waterboarding holds true.
And he is still fine with it to this day. He thinks it's fine, waterboarding.
Well, why did he say that it worked? He said that because of the water. First off, he said that only three people were waterboarded. And secondly, I only killed three people. It's still murder, but he only waterboarded three people. Still a crime. International crime is a crime under U.S. law, and it is a crime under international law. But the bigger piece of it all, and why George W. Bush belongs in the docket at the international court the way Slobodan Milosevic of Yugoslavia did, mm-hmm. was for committing what is called, under international law, a crime against peace. He invaded a country that had represented absolutely zero threat to the United States, even if it was if it had weapons of mass destruction. There's a lot of countries that have weapons of mass destruction, by the way.
Yeah, right? Saddam was still, he was just a bad guy. He was bad for the people of that country. Well, you know what, GW? You were bad for the people of this country, and you still are.
Well, let's see. He defended his decision to authorize waterboarding. He said the practice was limited to three detainees and led to intelligence breakthroughs that thwarted attacks and saved lives. He said, in fact, it stopped an attack on London. So I suppose you could say, and weigh in on this, 313-298-WRIF. All right. So he said it was only done to three people, some really bad actors. We all know that, right? Well, we don't know it for sure because none of this has ever come public. We know what the prosecution says and what the news accounts say, but this has never been like a real trial. And that's what a democratic government is all about, is transparency. But let's give them as much benefit of the doubt as possible. So these were really bad guys, and it was limited to three detainees, and it led to intelligence breakthroughs that thwarted attacks and saved lives. How do we know that? Well, the man has a history of lying, right?
Yeah, going to war over lies.
Yeah, and
that's a big history of lying.
And even if you want to say, well, he didn't know, we'll take him at his word again. Still, there has to be evidence produced in something like that. And let's see, I think, do I have that here? Oh, yeah, the U.K., United Kingdom, England is silent. They refused to say if it had acted on intelligence obtained through torture amid growing anger over George Bush's defense of the use of waterboarding. Now,
they're not talking.
Yeah, they're not saying, you know, this never happened. But mm-hmm. the fact that they're not saying, they're not letting him off the hook. The government did reject the former U.S. president's claims that such interrogation designed to mimic the experience of drowning did not equate to torture. You know, I don't know why they always use this language. This is from the Herald Scotland, the paper up in Edinburgh, I think. It doesn't mimic the experience of drowning. It drowns you.
Yeah.
And it pulls you out at the last moment. Mm. But let's see a little more here. MC International's senior director said in a statement, under international law, anyone involved in torture must be brought to justice, and that does not exclude former President George W. Bush. If his admission is substantiated, the USA has an obligation to prosecute him. In the absence of a U.S. investigation, other states must step in and carry out such an investigation themselves. And there are a number of countries, as you may full well know, that are charged under their national law with bringing to justice people that have committed international crimes, like Spain and I think England as well. So they could, like Henry Kissinger,
yeah,
who another war criminal going way back to Vietnam and Chile and any number of other dastardly deeds carried out.
Yeah, he's quite a list, doesn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, he cannot travel. He'll be arrested for war crimes. And oh,
isn't
that should
amazing?
Happen to George W. Bush.
And the people who put that guy on a pedestal.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And by the way, the U.S. Army Field Manual excludes waterboarding. And let's see, he wrote, who's the he here? CIA Director George Tenet, he says, no doubt the procedure, oh no, this was Bush, no doubt the procedure was tough, but medical experts assured the CIA that it did no lasting harm. Well, I'd probably physically know, yeah. But...
So says you.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if any of you have ever almost drowned. I wouldn't say I almost drowned, but I came, when I was a kid, pretty close. I mean, I was fished out pretty quickly.
Really?
But it is a terrifying,
horrible... I felt
horrible.
The fear, you know, and swim lessons. I mean, and think about it. The difference between being a little kid and swimming, and this!
No, actually, I guess I was drowning, except I just
really?
Got pushed. I got pulled out real quickly. So,
oh,
you know,
good.
I just...
Yeah.
But I sucked water into my... I mean,
oh,
you know, and it is
awful.
Yeah, yeah.
Horrifying.
All right, so what do we know about these torture sessions that this country that initially had the sympathy of people all over the world. Then through the invasion of Iraq, through Abu Ghraib, through the torture rendition of sending U.S. prisoners to suffer ghastly tortures. But there was also 92 interrogation videotapes, dozens of which showed two high-value detainees being subjected to waterboarding, and they were all destroyed by the CIA, by this one particular guy. So what happened to these people? Well, as it turns out, that the special prosecutor that was charged with checking out to see whether, hey, destroying evidence, they decided there wasn't enough evidence to secure an indictment against anyone responsible for the purge. So we don't know what the hell happened. We have to depend
on George
on
w.
the word
Bush.
Of George W. Bush.
That's sad.
Yeah, yeah. 313-298-WRIF. So I say George Bush to The Hague, or at least to make his name synonymous with illegality as well it should. Here's Brian in Port Huron. Hi, Brian. You're on the air with Peter and Jalene. Hey, Brian.
Yeah, you got to click it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to learn this one of these days. Brian, you're on the air now. Sorry, you're on the air. Go ahead.
That's all right. Hey, yeah. Earlier you guys were talking to somebody about being charged for drug testing, and I actually am being charged for drug testing by my new employer.
They're
taking $20 out of, like, 10 paychecks.
So that is $2.
For random drug testing?
No, for new drug testing, for, like, a new hire.
Oh. Okay.
Wow. Yeah, this Jason wrote in and said that it was part of his initial deductions, along with my uniform is when he started his job,
$35.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Still seems ridiculous to me.
Yeah. Are you in a occupation where it would be important to whether you had drugs in your system?
Oh, yeah, but Do you think they would absorb both costs? In my opinion?
Yeah,
well,
absolutely.
You think so? I mean,
really
it's one thing. I mean, we certainly don't want people driving buses or firemen or police officers or what have you. Although I've certainly known enough cops that get high.
Maybe not on while they're working though, Peter.
I don't know. Yeah, you're right. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, what I've always said, Brian, is that employers in non-critical employment situations have a right to a drug-free workplace, but a drug-free workforce is none of their damn business what we do on our off hours. Ain't nobody's business if I do, as the old song goes. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF.
Peter Winston, our friend Winston Smith, our friend of the show, wrote in, I'm encouraged by the fetus in the jar story because the only possible reason why Bush would reveal something like that is the hope that it will mitigate if he is tried for war crimes. Maybe he knows something's coming.
Remember Barbara Bush, too, when, what was the deal? Was that about Katrina, that when they asked her what did she think about it, and she said she didn't want to, something, her beautiful mind?
Yeah, she didn't want to disturb
her beautiful mind.
Oh.
Yeah, she's, did you ever see the Manchurian Candidate?
A long time ago.
That's true. Not the remake
she's
with Denzel.
She's the reason for all of this.
Yeah, not the recent one with Denzel Washington, which I thought was, but the original one with Frank Sinatra and Janet Leigh and Lawrence Harvey, and an absolutely incredible film.
Absolutely incredible.
Highly recommended. Here's Kay in Port Huron. Hi, Kay. It's Peter and Jolene. You're on the air. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. This is Kay Kimball, and I'm calling for the Blue Water Sierra Club and also the St. Clair County Community College's Green Team. And we're co-sponsoring a free screening and panel discussion of the documentary The Beloved Community, which is it's not about the civil rights movement, but it's actually about the health effects of Chemical Valley and Anjanang, the Chippewa Reserve right across from Port Huron.
Yeah, you mean why can't I think of it? What is it? What's right across from there?
Sarnia,
eh? Yeah.
Yeah.
Ends in an A. That's what I'm emphasizing.
When is the screening?
Yeah, when is it?
It's this Thursday, November 18th, 6:30 p.m. at the Fine Arts Theater at the St. Clair County Community College. And they can download a campus map at the college website, which is www.sc4.edu.
Okay.
And they can look under About Us, and you'll find map and directions.
Well, what do you think? I don't know if you heard me earlier, Kay. I was reading from this new report from the Mackinac Center, this right-wing non-think tank. Well, they say that environmental regulations in Michigan is what's holding back our economy. That's their deal on it. And they want to roll back all the regulations on industry.
Well, I think that the environment, we all depend on it utterly, and if we destroy it, we're destroying our lives. And you look at the Great Lakes, and we have a $4 billion fishery. If we have no fish, we no longer have that part of the economy. But worse, we all depend on the water for drinking water.
Sure.
We all depend on the diversity of wildlife and plants. I think it's tragic if we don't protect that.
Yeah, I don't get it. These rich people, they breathe the same air and drink the same water and eat the same food. I don't get it. I mean, are they that nuts about getting richer? I think they are. I think it's
pathological. Yeah, when it comes to industry, and you're blanketing rich people, you know, but you mean like industry more than anything, right?
Yeah.
Or the people who don't believe in global warming.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And there's some poor people who don't believe in global warming either, and I don't get that.
Well.
But on the other hand, Pogo said we have met the enemy and he is us. And all of
right.
us use chemicals. All of us, we're all part and parcel. And we all have to take a look at this and see what we can do you know, it's not just industry. And certainly, good movements have always started from the bottom up. You know?
Yeah,
sure, they have. That's the only ones that have ever made any impact. Well, Kay, thank you for that information. I hope a lot of people come out to it. It's the kind
Can
of thing.
Can I tell you who's in the panel? We're having a documentary, and we're having a panel afterwards.
Okay.
Dr. Jim Brophy, who is the retired director of Ontario Health Clinics for Ontario Workers, of Sarnia Lambden. Dean Edwardson, he's from the Sarnia Lambden Environmental Association, which represents the chemical companies. Kristen Juris from the St. Clair County Health Department. Dr. Margaret Keith, who's a former occupational health research coordinator.
You sure got, wait a minute, Kay, you got like how many people on this panel?
Well, we have a few.
sounds like a hefty panel.
Everybody gets about 2 minutes. Let me cut you a little short on the naming all the people, though, okay? But listen, I would urge people to get out to that. And can you just get, like, Google Green Team and come up with the information? Because sometimes...
Oh, I don't know. I think they have to go to the college. Well,
Peter, you could put a link up on your website.
Yeah,
how about they can call me?
No, you don't want to give your phone number.
It's too big of an audience. Here, it's scary because there's a lot of people out there. And you know. But listen, Peter will put it up on his website.
Yeah.
And then people from this show can link it. Well, I'll put it up on our Facebook page, and then it's available to everyone. And you did give out the info, so I think we're pretty good.
Yeah. Thank you, Kay. Thanks for that
so
information.
Much.
That's the kind of community events that builds resistance.
The kind of community events we get behind.
313-298-WRIF. We're going to be talking, well, not you and me, Jillian, but me.
Yes.
I recorded an interview with Harvey Wasserman from Solartopia, who was my guest at one. Are we doing that first?
We're going to do that second. He is wonderful.
Peter Phillips of Project Censored.
Great as well.
Yeah, the 25 most censored stories. That's at 1 a.m.
Yeah.
And at 1:30,
stories you never
Harvey
heard.
Wasserman. Yeah, and he's talking about how Vermont elected a government, a governor, that's going to shut down their nuclear plant
really?
In Vermont. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And how
amazing.
Just that nuclear power is just this scam to loot the taxpayers. Gee,
I would
what
say Harvey Wasserman is one of the experts on it, in this country.
Well, yeah, I mean, and he's got an environmentally appropriate name, Wasserman, Waterman.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, that's where it came from.
He wants clean Wasser. All right, let's continue onward. Here is Laurie. Laurie's in Auburn Hills. Hi, you're on the air.
Good evening, Peter. Hey, I was just flipping through the dial and heard you guys talking about George W. and his still standing behind the use of the waterboarding. And I'm no political guru. I don't know all the facts and all that, but I just wonder, to protect us, to protect you, to protect your family and mine. Don't you think a little bit of rough handling of people that want to blow us up is okay if it saves?
Well, how do you know?
What if these people don't want to blow us up? What if this particular person? How do you know?
Part of it is the rule of law, and that's what George W. Bush violated over and over and over again. And also, you only have his word that the English were the British were unwilling to corroborate that what was tortured out of these people. I mean, so now the United States is a torture state. It used to condemn other countries that employed torture. Now, well, not with Barack Obama ended that, but under George W. Bush, the United States could be considered a torture state. That's not what we want to be. And most people that do interrogations and what have you say that this kind of stuff is absolutely useless. This one guy, I forgot who it was. What's the guy they know by his initials, Jillian?
Oh, Mohammed Sheikh. That one?
Yeah, yeah. He was waterboarded like 42 times. I mean, they must be just doing it for sport.
Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's always the argument, Laurie, that they say, well, what would you do if you knew that there was a bomb ticking and the only way you could do it would be to rip the guy's fingernails out? But that's never the case. And what really happens is this slow descent into barbarism. So we become increasingly, well...
As barbaric as the rest of them. And you hear these stories about, cutting the cutting their hand off or whatever it is.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Laura. I appreciate your call. Let's see. Here is Ahmad in Ann Arbor. Hi, you're on the air. Hello. Wait a minute. Did I not do it? Yeah. Are you with us? Ahmad. Ahmad. Am I doing something?
I don't hear anything.
Yeah. I don't know. We're going to
put you on hold.
We're going to put you on hold. Stephanie, maybe you get back to him. See if I was doing something wrong. Sometimes I do. Here's Tim. Tim, you're on the air. Where are you calling from?
Hey, I'm calling from Romulus.
You're on the air. Well, I can hear the planes.
How you doing? It's been a while since I've talked to you.
All right, what's up?
I was the guy back in 92 with chasing down the Iron Maiden front row tickets.
All right, man, that is etched in my mind.
I know. It was a wild day for me, too.
Yeah, well, I'll never forget it.
20 years ago.
Oh, yep. Hey.
So what's up?
I'm always a fan. Just a few quick questions. I'm copywriting some stuff. Is it proper to do the certified mail back to yourself if you copy and print them out and keep them sealed? Is that legal copyright?
Yes.
What are you copywriting?
Yes.
I've got some, lyrics or poetry.
That's what I did.
Is what I'm doing.
Let me tell you my experience with copywriting of the kind of stuff that most of us do. It's really not even necessary.
Yeah, but this is the cheapest way to do it. Yeah. Just mail it to yourself. I have all of my lyrics in that way. Just, you know.
I know.
Well, it can't do any harm.
Jillian, we haven't been promoting you enough. Jillian's a singer-songwriter.
There's nothing to promote.
It's
right now.
It's not like I'm just looking here at the bands that are coming to our town. It's not like, like Ozzy or The Cult or the Danzig or something like that is going to say, hey, that Jillian Jordan, she didn't copyright her lyrics. I'm going to steal them. There, a friend of mine, who actually a husband and wife, who printed books, and in it said, no copyright, reprint freely. Okay?
Okay.
All right. So somebody, a publisher called them and said, we'd like to reprint that. And he said, well, go ahead. And he said, well, I need a letter of permission. He said, it says right in the book, no copyright, reprint freely. He said, I need you to sign off on it.
Yeah.
I need you to write a letter relinquishing any, what would you call it?
Rights.
Come so you can't come back at me. And the guy actually refused to do it. But the point being is that there's established, I don't even know if this is particularly the case, but sort of a common law copyright. So nobody is going to take your lyrics or your writing or certainly not your poetry. When I see a little chapbook that has like 25 and Gaia bless all the poets that self-publish and all that. Mm-hmm. And they take they type a C and then they write a circle around it themselves or something like that. It's not necessary.
Well, one tiny other little quick question was about doing that with photos, because I like going out to the nature parks, and I have a lot of wildlife photos.
Uh-huh.
That if I put those on the disc and I at least give an explanation about where they were taking and what the subject is, and giving some kind of detail, and putting those on a disc and mailing themselves, like I said, certified mail back to myself.
I don't know enough about that. Maybe some.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, here, all right. I'll tell you what, Tim, listen off the air. I'll tell you a quick story about that. You can call in the meantime, 313-298-WRIF. And that is that I wrote an article about one of my trips to Cuba.
Yeah.
And I went to Baracoa, Cuba,
sure.
Cuba, which is one city in the eastern part of the island that is actually the second place where Columbus was discovered by the people that lived there.
Oh, right.
And so it was published first in the Fifth Estate magazine, and then it was reprinted in something called the Evergreen Review online.
Oh, okay.
In fact, you can still find it, Google it. And And there was a shot from Baracoa, Cuba, in there that I took, and
that they put in their publication.
Yeah, so I got an email message from the Times of London, this prestigious conservative paper that's printed in London, saying that they had found my photograph online and wanted to reprint it in a travel article.
No kidding.
I said, how much would that be? So I had absolutely no idea. My first inclination was just to say...
But not for them.
Yeah. Well, I just said, whatever your freelance rate is, which turned out not to be very much. But anyway, that's what they do now. And now if you put photos up online, that people will sometimes download them. So I don't even know. I mean, if they would have just taken it, what would have been my recourse? Gone to London and sued them?
I don't see you doing that.
No. No. I don't know.
A little trip.
Yeah. Let's take a break. And in the meantime, there are a couple open lines. And here is the phone number.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with the energy-saving Wave Ventilation Unit. Wave Ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. The computerized Wave Ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty, no filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars a year in energy costs. One customer wrote,
I was stunned by the difference. I had a dehumidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. And now that smell is finally gone.
Wave can transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. Find out more about Wave Ventilation right now.
For free information, go to goodairnow.com. That's goodairnow.com. Or call 1-866-324-9481. That's 1-866-324-9481.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe-clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
These days, people of all ages, including adults, can have a perfect smile. Thanks to today's technology, people with crooked teeth may no longer need to wear metal braces. One option many adults prefer is invisible braces. Instead of the typical metal bands or brackets that are cemented to teeth, these braces are clear plastic trays. Some advantages of invisible braces are they can be removed for eating and for brushing and flossing. They are practically invisible to see, and they are less irritating to gums than traditional braces. Keep in mind that invisible braces are only available for people who need minor corrective work. If you are considering braces and would like to learn more about invisible braces, speak with your dentist. You're never too old for a beautiful smile. For the ADA Dental Minute, I'm Dr. Maria Lopez Howell. For more information, visit our website at ada.org.
My mom is my hero. She goes into burning buildings. She finds people inside who need to be saved. She helps them get out, even when she can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My mom is a firefighter, but the best thing she can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. Smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
101, The Riff.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're two payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
Back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back to our final segment. And something what? Just flashed in my mind.
Well, this is your last chance to get in if you wanted to call about any of the topics or bring up something that you saw this week or thought about this week. This is your chance. And I can't believe more people aren't, you know, we used to get pretty beat up for beating up Bush. But I think maybe people are.
Well, on my website, there's a link. There's a photograph of Bush, and it says, "I screwed you all, but thanks for blaming it on the black guy."
Oh, man.
That's on my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com.
That's something he would say.
And there's that column I read from earlier, Who Will Stand Up to the Super Rich, the whole thing about the Deficit Reduction Commission that's going to try to raise the retirement age, to cut back on Social Security and Medicare payments, raise the gasoline tanks. Tax rather, because and it's, man, gasoline is going up.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah, and the New York Times said there should be shared sacrifice. I don't buy that for one little minute. The rich people ruined all of this. Bush and his cronies, let them pay for it. They got the money, for one thing. We don't have the money. Tonight, let's see, in about 25 minutes, I'm going to be interviewing Peter Phillips, who's the founder of Project Censored. And he says, believe it or not, the news we need is never reported in the corporate media.
We knew that.
Yeah. He's got the 25 most censored stories, and we're going to talk about some of those. Harvey Wasserman, after him, the director of Solartopia, and he says not only is nuclear power dangerous, it's a ripoff of taxpayer money. And there's also several things on these protests against the tuition hikes in England. This massive demonstration, 52,000 people marching downtown London. If you saw it on the news, it's all because that about, I think about 500 students attacked the headquarters of the British Conservative Party, broke their windows, started a fire in their courtyard.
Yeah,
so naturally, that was what got the attention of everybody. But it's the same thing there. They say, we got to cut down on stuff. Education used to be free. Higher education used to be free in Britain, but just can't afford it anymore. Well, maybe if they stopped being the lapdog for the United States and fighting wars with us, they'd have a little more money. They're also going to have cuts in welfare that's going to make it just more difficult for people that are suffering hard times. And here it says they're going to apply penalties to those who refuse to take part in unpaid community work programs the government plans as part of its efforts to familiarize jobless people with the world of work. Any of you out of work that are listening, or any of you been out of work, were you out of work because you were unfamiliar with the world of work? Or did you get fired? Or was the economy
laid off
in the toilet because all these rich SOBs screwed it all up? I mean, this is so insulting. So here's the deal. New proposals provide for able-bodied job seekers to do regular 4-week stints of manual labor at tasks like removing graffiti, sweeping streets, or gardening in public parks as the price of retaining their state allowances, which is not very generous. To learn the basic disciplines, like working a 9-to-5 day. You know, there's this cycle that what happens is you are, say, a maintenance worker for a company or for a city. You get laid off. You go on to the dole, as they call it in Britain, or go on to unemployment. Your unemployment runs out. Then you got to go on these workfare programs, right, and they put you back doing the same job that you previously were getting a union wage for,
yeah,
and now you're getting $100 a week.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I don't even know. At least they are out there. They're out there saying, no, we're not going to accept that. It says on my site here, in the U.S. we say, yes, sir, thank you, sir. Pathetic.
Right, right. Hey, we had Rick in East Point write in. Did you read that one?
Go ahead, yeah.
That, you two agree on something, and that's that the United States is the brutal criminal foreign policy of the United States. He says he firmly believes the world's biggest terrorist nation, the biggest threat to any democracy, is the good old U.S. of A. He said you should talk about the School of Americas, which we've talked about extensively over the years.
School of Americas is the school in Athens, Georgia, that trains the U.S. or Latin American military. Well, there's less people to train.
Trains them to kill.
Yeah, well, to they say to, you know, to teach them how to respect human rights, but like they train the Colombian military that has the most awful record of human rights abuses in that part of the world. So we're paying tens of millions of dollars to train South American soldiers. Is that what you want to spend your money on? I don't think so. I don't want to spend mine on that. Here's Joe in Waterford. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
How are you doing?
Yeah,
hey,
well, good, good. Joe, what's happening?
I was going to tell you, you know, you talk about Social Security and, you know, the cigarette tax and how much it brings in. But in reality, you know, they should be able to advertise, because just imagine if nobody smoked and we had 400. I mean, people need to die. I mean, what would the world be like? I mean, I hate to say it, but what would the world be like?
Population control.
Population control.
Yeah, good idea,
exactly,
Joe.
My exact point.
Yeah,
I mean,
good idea.
You know, what would it be like? So why shouldn't it be able to advertise, you know?
Yeah. I think why don't I make it mandatory to smoke?
Oh,
I mean, when your
whole thing's crazy.
We're all going to die. We're not going to live forever. I mean, it's a fact. You know, so whatever.
This is a little insensitive.
Yeah, I'm planning to give it the best shot I can, not the worst shot though.
Julie's not going to like this. And another thing, when it comes to Bush, I agree with you. You know, hey, he messed a lot of things up. But one thing I'm going to say for him is I don't think that any terrorist should have any rights. So any of the waterboarding, any of that.
Well, how about just an ordinary criminal? Should they have any rights?
Well, you're talking about you're not talking about a regular criminal, right? You're talking about somebody who ran buildings and killed innocent women and children into, you know, the 911 towers. And any of those people that
all those
FBI,
guys died, by the way, they all died.
Yeah. Well, the problem is, Joe, you don't know what anybody has done. Because that's why there's a constitution that has all those guarantees against things like you're saying happening, because that used to happen not just to really bad people, but it happened routinely, particularly to people that opposed, like, the English government. So they were tortured and they were put in jail without, you know, any legal representation. So the founding fathers said, you know, this, we want to have a guarantee that even the worst among us still have the basic rights of everybody, because, it's unfortunate that in order to guarantee people that probably all of us would like to see something very, very awful done to, that, it allows that then to be done to anyone else as well. So you have to have a rule of law. You want to let George W. Bush decide who should be tortured? Maybe they're going to say, wait a minute, Joe, you were on that plane, and let's do him in a little bit and see if he comes up with something. Oh, no, sorry about that, Joe. We made a mistake.
But you know what? There's more people than just Bush involved in the decision.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I'm saying if it was my kid, my family, you know, my sister in that tower, and I had the chance, the opportunity to sit in front of the man who did it, I would torture myself.
Well, of course. I mean, it's the kind of thing that if someone killed someone that you loved or you know, raped someone or did something awful to him, probably you would, that rage and the desire for revenge and
a natural reaction.
But the whole idea is to not allow that process to occur is what it's all about. All right, Joe. Thank you. Appreciate it. And I understand the sentiment, but that's why we have what's called the Constitution. Here's Martin in Roseville. Hi, Martin. You're on the air.
Oh, Peter. Click, click.
What?
While you're clicking.
Yeah, I'm sorry. What? Hold on, Martin.
Okay. I've got an email from, I think this is Tom. He's against drug testing without probable cause for all occupations.
Yeah. All right. I'm against drug testing.
Do what you want on your own time.
I'm against drug testing. Are we for drug testing of train engineers and bus drivers
and airplane pilots? Yeah, sure.
We're for that?
Well, why are we not?
I don't know.
Do we need to have a meeting?
I don't like the whole idea.
Drinks at your house tomorrow. We'll discuss it.
Yeah. We'll roll a doobie. We don't do drug testing here.
I'll walk home.
All right. Here's Martin in Roseville. Hey, Martin, you're on the air.
All right. You guys ready this time?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, listen, the last call that I heard was from a girl that said, you know, if we pick a couple people out and it saves a couple of lives or whatever, and she was talking about waterboarding or whatever.
Right. Uh-huh.
Well, listen, I bought a B-movie at a video store, and I would love to send it to you. I would love for you guys to watch this movie. It's about an Armenian girl that gets picked up by the United States government. Can you give me the address to where to send the movie?
Wait, what's it called?
What's the name of it? What is the name of your movie?
It's called Torture Room.
Torture Room?
Wow. Yeah,
we can get that on Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't need to send it to us.
But by the way, let me just say, Martin, anybody that wants to email me or Jalene, you can just do it care of WRIF. It's real easy. One Radio Plaza, Ferndale, 48220. So, or you can just probably send it to One Radio Plaza, Ferndale, and that would do it. So what struck you about the movie, Martin?
It was waterboarding all the way. They captured this girl. They tortured her the whole time. They starved her. It was just like my jaw hit the floor when I watched this movie. I bought it for $5. I didn't think I'd like it, but wow, what a movie it was.
Yeah.
I'll have to look it up.
Well, hey, let me ask you one thing before I hang up.
Yeah.
What the heck happened to you guys when we were burying that Hummer at the Heidelberg Project?
We were there.
I know. I went out for a half hour to get a hamburger, and when I got back, they said you guys were there and gone. I couldn't wait to meet you, Peter.
Oh, well, we'll be out at some more events like that. That was fun. We actually sang some songs and got in the circle, the healing circle. You missed healing circle.
I'm glad I wasn't there for that, but...
We were singing Kumbaya. What is it? What's the thing? Kumbaya.
Some kind of kumbaya-ish.
Kumbaya thing.
Oh, yeah. We were singing. Goodbye, Homer. Well, hey, listen, you guys, have a good night. And get that movie. It's called Torture Room.
Yeah.
All right, I wrote it down.
Right at the top of I'm going to put it at the top of my queue.
Thanks for calling.
Netflix. Yeah, thanks, Martin. What we're talking about, Heidelberg Project, is, I don't even know if I can explain that. I did an interview with the director of it, Tyree Guyton.
Yeah.
Big art installation made up of refuge.
Yeah, I mean, it is amazing.
Blocks and blocks.
It's really cool. I mean, it just shows that, you know, it's a display of all the trash in the world, and that it can be made into something.
Art.
Art into something beautiful. And, you know, we have someone who works here,
yeah,
you know, who saw that,
yeah,
thought it was the most ridiculous thing.
Really?
Ever. And I thought, well, this pretty much goes in line with everything else with your politics. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Yeah. Well, actually, if you go to our Facebook page, and you don't even need to be a member of Facebook, but if you go to, what is it?
Facebook.com/nightcall.
Yeah. And there is a link, I think. It's right up on there now. Let me see. Is it? Because sometimes it,
moves down.
Yeah, it moves around.
The page.
It's moved.
It's moved. Okay.
Yeah. But there you are, Jalene Jordan, singer-songwriter.
Hey.
You're on there. David Rovix, another singer-songwriter. Our pal, Mike Malloy, who was probably the most acerbic. I like that one.
Acerbic.
Acerbic talk show host in America. The Wobbly Kitchen.
Yeah. We have a lot of cool friends.
Yeah. There's actually quite a bit. I can, even though I'm not a member of Facebook, there is a lot of stuff on there. And let's see, I wanted to give a shout out. Where did he go? Does this stuff just disappear? Worry about it.
Yeah, I don't think you understand the Facebook page yet. You'll get it, though.
Yeah.
You're a pretty quick study, I hear.
I am. All right, let's go back to our
phones.
313-298-WRIF. Got time. You know, actually, let me get this, because this person may be paying long-distance rates.
Okay.
Because this is way on the west coast of Canada. It's Larry calling from Vancouver. Hi, Larry. You're on the air.
Yes, good evening to you and Jalene.
Hello.
Oh, thank you.
Welcome.
You still have a good show.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I missed the first part of your show, but I just wondering from your midterm elections in the United States.
Yes.
I heard that the governor-elect of Vermont wants to have a single-payer system.
Wow.
And
wants to close the nuclear plant there.
Yeah, and that as well.
Well, they call it the People's Republic of Vermont.
Yeah. Yes, and
pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I heard from Bernie Sanders.
The senator, the independent senator, the socialist senator, actually identifies himself as a democratic socialist, yeah.
Yes, he said that they want to go ahead and have single-payer health insurance.
Yeah.
But they said that they have to apply for a waiver from the... And I don't know if that's from the Senate or the president.
But you can opt out, and because, for instance, Texas is thinking of opting out of Medicaid to save money, which would mean poor people wouldn't have any health care at all.
What a rotten state.
Why didn't we let them set up their own independent republic
bye-bye.
Way back when, in the 1840s?
But we digress.
Yeah, sorry.
From Canada to Texas.
I have three quick questions.
Sure.
Oh.
I'm just wondering, number one, with these waivers, is there any reason why the president or the Senate would say no? And number two, is there any other state that wants to have a single payer or public option? And number three, have you heard from that commission? I think it was the one that just came out recently.
The deficit that, commission.
They said there's something like the Veterans Administration that people would have to pay a copay.
Really? For the vets?
Yeah. So I'm just wondering what's your answer.
Well, let me see. The first question, I don't know. The second one, the answer is no.
The first one, I would say, it's quite possible.
That what? They could opt out?
Congress would say...
Anyway.
Yeah, where are we?
Wait, never mind. But, who knows? But, if they're going to start charging vets, maybe we're getting ready for a revolution. What we should be ready for is something... like another party other than the Democrats and the Republicans, that's for sure.
Well, the only thing I can add to that is that I think one of the first times I called your show, I was mentioning that in Canada we have a new Democratic Party, which is closely affiliated with Labour. But I the last time I can see that, I mean, other than recently with Perot, the last time I can say there was a very, very competitive presidential election was 1948 when they had the Progressive Party.
Oh, well, actually, they had two parties that took votes away from the Democrats. One was the Progressive Party, which was a left-wing party that Henry Wallace was the president who had been the vice president of the United States under Truman, and also a racist so-called states' rights party done by this pro-slavery racist Strom Thurmond. Ooh, I just looked at the clock, Larry. I got to move on. Thanks for making our show international. Call us again. Haven't heard from you in a while. Thank you. Let's see. We got to get these calls kind of quickly. Josh in Imlay City. Josh, hi. You're on the air.
Hey. I was just listening about the George W. thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm in college right now. I'm a college student, and I wrote a whole paper on that whole situation. And it's obviously wrong to do that. I mean, if you read the Geneva Conventions, like you read it right in the torch thing, broke like every single rule. But at some point they were broken. But not to mention like Vietnam, somebody did the water trick, which is like a way to drown someone with water, basically. And he was court-martialed a week and a half after doing that.
Yeah, you know that in the Philippines, which the United States suppressed this rebellion, it was a lot like Vietnam, where they killed like 150,000, U.S. Army killed like 150,000 Filipinos who didn't want to be a colony of the United States after they had just got out from under Spain. And there were a number of U.S. Soldiers that were prosecuted for waterboarding Filipinos. So, yeah, it's internationally recognized as a crime. And its efficacy, that is the fact that it works or claims that it was work, because we have no idea whether it worked at all. We have is George W. Bush's word
on it. Yeah.
It does not mean that it doesn't rise to the level of a crime. All right, I'm going to have to cut this a little short because I've got to see if I can get a couple more people in. Thanks for your call. Fred in Detroit. Fred, you got to give me kind of just the headlines here because we're almost out of time.
Well, first of all, just to touch on George Bush, evidently he suspected of plagiarism in his book. He can't keep the story straight from other writings he's done. And I get the feeling that this shale fracturing for natural gas is about to become a huge disaster for the environment of this country.
Well, I think you're right, and it's just now beginning to rise to the level of public consciousness to the fact where that fracturing, probably people are going, what? But you're going to know soon enough. Fred, thanks for that. I appreciate it. Here's Bill in Dearborn. Bill, you tell us quick. You're our last caller.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Good. Yeah, my thing is this government. You know, all the foreign aid money that we spend on other countries.
Yeah.
And we can't even take care of the poor people and the elderly in this country for health care.
Thank you.
Well, we can't even have schools that have the proper class size and what have you.
And supplies.
Exactly. You know, I mean, just Israel alone, what do we spend, $10 billion a year on them?
Something. We're just sending them $20 billion in jet planes, and that's what I was saying, that I think that could be used a little better elsewhere. All right, I'm going to cut you short, Bill, because we got to go home.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for calling. Stephanie, thank you for all the work you do making this show happen.
Yes.
Again, go to our Facebook page. You can just either, what do you do, just put in night call?
Yeah, just put, well, there are a few night calls. So you want to put with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan. Just start typing Peter and it'll bring us up.
All right, coming up, the 25 most censored stories. Back with that after these.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Time's running out. You're maxed out on your credit cards. The collection calls are coming every day. And now you're two payments behind on your mortgage. Every time you turn on the radio, there's some cheerful couple telling you how they got out of debt overnight. Their stress is gone, and everything's just wonderful. Come on. The truth is, what sounds too good to be true is too good to be true. You need real help, and you need it now. Not bankruptcy. That should be your last choice. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're the attorney-driven program, dedicated to helping you get out of debt in months instead of years, saving you thousands, and without risking your family home. We know what we're doing, and we don't make promises we can't keep. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Get out of debt. Call Credit Card Relief at 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
Detroit Rock Station. 101. The Riff. 101.
WRIF.
The Riff.
Hi, this is Mark Schmeiss from Creed.
Everybody, this is Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters.
Hey, it's Casey.
This is Chad.
This is Chris.
And this is Brian from Cabo.
And you
got it on Detroit's rock station, 101 WRIF. The Riff.
Everything that rocks.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
He ran for state office and was beaten. Started a business and failed. Ran for Congress and lost. But thankfully, Abraham Lincoln didn't give up. Perseverance. Pass it on. A message from the Foundation for a Better Life.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. You may have heard me quote in the past a 100-year-old saying by Mark Twain, who said, if you don't read the newspapers, you are uninformed. If you do read the newspapers, you're misinformed. So there's a problem there. And trying to get accurate information so we can make informed decision about what the world is all about is extraordinarily important. We have probably more news sources now than we ever have, but sorting through them all is extraordinarily difficult. I mean, how many times have you gotten some email saying, oh, this is the truth about this, and then you turn out it's just some, you know, piece of nonsense that's been forwarded. There's another way that we find as citizens a difficult path to figuring out what's going on, and that is information that takes the form of articles or essays that is news and is pretty much excluded from corporate media. Thankfully, we have Project Censored, Media Democracy in Action. And in recent years, we've interviewed Peter Phillips. He's a professor of sociology at Sonoma State University in California. And he's president of the Media Freedom Foundation. And we are reaching him in Northern California in his office. Are you in Sonoma, Peter?
Actually, out by Bodega Bay.
Okay. Well, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Well, thanks very much, Peter. It's good to be on with you.
So your project with Project Censored has always been to list the top censored stories from 2009 and 2010 in this case. But how many years do you go back doing this? Quite a few. We've done this any number of times.
Well, Project Censored has been doing this for 35 years.
Oh, okay.
So we're the longest-running media research group in the country, and we've expanded significantly, so we're no longer just at Sonoma State University. We're at 33 campuses spread all over the country and the world who've contributed stories to this new book, Censored 2011. And this is a listing of the most 25 most important news stories the corporate media hasn't covered. And they're significant because they're kind of interrelated because of the economy and the environment and capital expansion and the bailouts. I mean, we see a number of stories, and you know, the deindustrialization of the country and the impact that's had on Detroit. I mean, there's a lot of stories here that are interlinked of what the powerful are doing in society, what the policy elites are doing that impacts us all.
Now, the top censored stories of 2009 and 2010, these are ones that when you put them on your website, and we should, I'm remiss in not having, I don't want to say it wrong, it's just a very simple.
Well, if you just, projectcensored.org is the site, and you can just Google Project Censored, you'll get us every time. And then we have subsites under that one. So we're getting right now 250,000 unique views per month on the site. That's, you know, 250,000 people stopping and reading and searching and doing stuff. We get millions of hits. But
what does that tell you? That
it tells us that people are hungry for what, you know, what real news is and the truth of what's going on in the world and some analysis of what's going on, too. That's really important part of university's work is not only is it a news story, but explaining that news story in the context of major social changes that are ongoing is a great service to truth in the world.
Now, whenever I give talks on the media, I'm giving it away to any future audience, but I often start with saying, how many people here think the media is doing their job? And no one raises their hand, of course, if
right.
They come to see me. And I say, am I the only person in the room that thinks the media is doing the exact job that it's set out to do, which, in fact, is corporate media to censor stories of the type that you have in the new book, Censored 2011? Or do you come at it from a different way?
We use the terminology managed news.
Okay.
Because, you know, the major media corporation in the U.S., the top 10, including the New York Times, Washington Post, and all the news, 24-hour news programs, are literally managed from their board of directors of only 118 people. Now, these people, in turn, sit on the corporate boards of the big banks, the insurance companies, the military contractors. They are corporate America. And so their agenda is to tell us what they want us to know. And that includes the propaganda from about the war and about capital and nobody pay any attention to what the Fed's doing. It's quite amazing. And they literally treat the American public like, you know, we're supposed to entertain them. It's bread and circuses. And then they treat us like mushrooms. If you know how mushrooms are raised, they're raised
in the dark.
And fed a lot of manure.
That's an old one, too. That probably Mark Twain probably said that one as well.
I bet he did.
Peter Phillips is my guest on the Peter Werby Show from Project Censored. We're talking about the top censored stories of the last year or so. And you can go to projectcensored.org. There's a brand new book that lists all these. Now, the stories that you have listed here, I have 25 of them. And by the way, there's also a link on my site. If you go over to the right side, there's the iPhone with apps there, and it's on the right-hand column. But these are stories that did have some appearance in reality because you're linked to them, right?
Oh, yeah. We link to them. We've got them covered. We know what's what.
I'm going to let Peter shut off his iPhone.
Well,
what I'm getting at, though, you say they're censored, but then here they are.
Well, there are sources out there to cover all of these stories. There's a lot of independent media out there on the internet. The problem is most people don't know what to trust. So, story number one is about the economy, and it's written by Chris Hedges in Truthdig, Mike Hudson in Global Research, Fred Ware in the Christian Science Monitor, So there's a lot of different sources, some of them foreign, and people aren't sure that these are trustworthy news sources. So part of what universities do is evaluate these stories, look at the impacts of, you know, what the truth of that story is, and then evaluate and post that story and say this is a valid source.
Now, this top censored story from ProjectCensored.org and from Censored, the book Censored 2011, is extraordinary because it is the kind of thing that the contents, if this is correct and this is going to occur, is something that could have the most incredible impact on all of us, that there's global plans to replace the dollar. This is extraordinary, isn't it?
Well, it's extraordinary in terms of our economy and where we're going. So, I mean, this is coming from in multiple sources in England, Agence France in France, the several economists here in the U.S. and Canada, and they're saying that the dollar is being undermined as the international reserve currency. In other words, Russia, China, India, South America are all proposing alternative currencies for the base for international trading. Already in South America, the sucre is being pushed as the Bolivarian countries are uniting and creating their own currency. And Russia has been calling for a currency that would be based, and coordinated through the UN. So the dollar is used in all oil transactions and major economic transactions in the world. So there's trillions and trillions of dollars out there. Unfortunately, a lot of those dollars are surplus dollars in countries like China and the Saudis. They each have $1 trillion that there's only so much that they can buy from the U.S. So they acquire these dollars and they'll put them in treasury bonds, which is really the only safe place to put them. And that's like loaning money to the U.S. government. And those treasury bonds have been used, of course, to expand the war, so and the military occupation of the world by the U.S. and NATO. So they're not wanting to continue to do that. And if the dollar is no longer the reserve currency, we're going to see trillions of dollars flowing back to the U.S. trying to buy product. It'll cause literally inflation for everybody, particularly for working people. The things like gasoline, food, clothing, the stuff you buy in Walmart. Nobody shops in Walmart, right?
Yeah.
But the stuff you buy in your retail stores could double or triple in a very short period of time in terms of cost. The impacts on the working class, the bottom 80% of us who have almost no financial wealth and reserves, could be devastating. The same time, we could continue to see the spiral down of working class housing in terms of its value, because it was so hype, it was so inflated. So we see some really dangerous economic conditions emerging for the working people in the U.S.
Well, you add that to the deindustrialization, something like 45,000 factories have closed in this decade alone, and we're simply kind of floating on the ether. That is to say, the financial markets, which is, sooner or later, someone's going to say there's no there, and we could be looking at something tremendously catastrophic for all of us. But the part of the
seems like it's inevitable, and that's what the economists are saying, is that we can't continue. So just last week, the Fed created. You take a computer, you say, okay, $1 trillion. They can create money that way, and then they'll put it and they'll loan it to banks. And in this case, they brought treasury bonds with it to try to protect the treasury bond market because it's slowing down. And and then they did the $800 billion bailout to the insurance companies and the central banks. That's just creating money. And when you create that kind of money, it devalues everybody else's dollars. So we're in a spiral that's really, really dangerous.
Well, I think one of the problems with getting this news to uncensor this. We're talking about the 25 censored stories in a brand new book called Censored 2011. It's on available everywhere, and you can go to projectcensored.org as well. You can go to my website is also Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com, and link onto this. It sounds like there's a tsunami. Well, I mean, it's a great analogy. There's a tsunami coming, and as individuals, someone just riding down the street listening to this program or sitting at home all by themselves, totally isolated, atomized part of the population, and thinking, what the hell can I do? I want to find some cheery news. I don't want to hear Peter Phillips and Peter Werbe talking about this gloom and doom, which in a way almost encourages then media outlets to show you the happy stuff.
Well, the happy stuff or the scary stuff, and to try to keep us in board. I mean, the content of corporate media is emotional. And so they can have a scary story, but they're not going to do a deep analysis of capitalism or how, you know, we're in deindustrializing or why the jobs are leaving and going elsewhere in the world. But capital is, it's free flow. So the NATO, U.S. NATO military industrial media empire with 1,000 bases worldwide, and, you know, is about the free flow of capital and the ability for the central banks in Europe and the U.S. and Japan to move, you know, their capital resources, their money, anywhere in the world is going to get the best return. So the World Bank, if that's their agenda, the IMF, that's their agenda. So they will impose rules on countries that you can't restrict this, you can't, you know, have these rules, you have to allow free flow of capital. And if you don't, you can be penalized and or even invaded. So that's, we have this NATO police force now for the world, and when we look at Afghanistan and Iraq, it's really about controlling the natural resources, the center of the natural resources, oil and gas, in the Caspian Sea region and in the Gulf, for U.S. European capital to invest and sell. And that means keep the Chinese out and keep the Russians out.
Now, dear listeners, this is story number one of Censored Stories of 2009 and 2010. We have a list here of 25. You can look in the book, read the book Censored 2011. You can look at the website, projectcensored.org. And think about this, the discussion between me and Peter Phillips. We've maybe spent 10 minutes just on story number one. I mean, how critical this is to our existence as a nation, or forget nation, how about our families and our communities and our neighborhood? Let's skip around a little in some of these other top 25 here. What if you had, say we had time to do one or two others, what would you select here for among these 25? Go ahead.
I think you have to look at number two.
Okay.
It is an environmental story, but it interrelates to number one. The U.S. Department of Defense is the worst polluter on the planet. They're burning 20,000 barrels of oil a day. We've got toxic waste dumped at bases all over the world. In the U.S., at our 6,000 bases here, they're not under EPA laws. They can do whatever they want. So you've got toxic waste. They end up being dump sites, these bases, that are polluting the world, let alone the use of depleted uranium in weaponry that now is spread throughout Iraq, Afghanistan, and the Balkans, with a radioactive life of 500 million years. One out of three children in Fallujah are born with birth defects today. It's a massive pollution of the world with a machine that's so destructive and so environmentally damaging that it's the worst of any, more than any countries in the world.
Hmm. And, of course, all of this, and what we were talking earlier, I mean, the The U.S. military has two functions. One, as you so accurately said, that it allows the free flow of American capital, particularly to go worldwide. But also, and I know you know this, it is the component of our domestic economy that we call the military-industrial complex. Like some people say, we can never win in Afghanistan. Maybe not. But at some level, it doesn't matter as long as the expenditures are there.
It's extremely profitable.
Yeah, exactly. Win or lose.
Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, they're making huge profits, Carlyle Group, Bechtel, huge profits from permanent war. And we're spending, Obama's budget for 2011, $740 billion. And that doesn't count the $50 billion in Homeland Security, the money that goes to Department of Energy for nuclear weapons, and all the veterans benefits. So it's really $1 trillion a year for war.
Yeah. And we say, well, how can we solve this deficit? I got an idea. Let's raise the retirement age and tax people more and all that. Let's go on with a couple more. How about here's a piece of good news, and that is story number 12 about Cuba and Haiti.
Well, Cuba, this was quite an amazing story. Cuba provided more medical aid to Haiti than any other nation in the world after the big earthquakes. They had a couple hundred doctors there right away, and then they ended up with over 340 doctors. They put up full hospitals and continue to do that. They can do surgeries. In fact, Cuba, a third of Cuba's gross domestic product is medical services to the world. I mean, they're training doctors from third world countries from all over the world, and then they go back to their countries. I mean, Cuba has become one of the medical centers of the world, new technologies and expansion. So when they go in, they take in a full, they did this in Pakistan during the floods, they did it during the earthquakes in Indonesia. They're the number one provider of medical services in these emergencies. It's quite amazing, and you don't see it anywhere in the corporate media. In fact, 2 weeks ago, Fidel Castro made a speech about this, and pointed to Project Censored, saying that at least this university out here in California and this book tells the truth about what medical services Cuba's providing.
Number 22, why is this in Censored 2011? 1.2 billion people in India to be given biometric ID cards. Why is that a censored story, and what's the impact of that, Peter Phillips?
Well, it's exactly where we're going in the world, where the top-down control of citizens. Biometric ID cards, it could be eye scans and fingerprints on an ID card. The Indian government's trying to implement that, and of course it's first world countries that are benefiting from that in the sense that they provide the technology. But they're trying to implement this and have every citizen in their country carry or be required to carry one of these biometric cards. There's resistance there. There's people that don't want to have this kind of identification. It's going to be hard-pressed to do it. But it's a forerunner of where we're going in the world. Now, our driver's licenses are set up to be the national ID card, and that little stripe in the back of them could carry all our biometric information as well.
Remind us what biometric means in this context.
Well, it would be your eye scan, your fingerprints, could all be immediately transmitted by swiping that card. A police officer could swipe it and know immediately who you were and be able to verify that. So,
on the face of it, people might say, well, so what? I that old thing, I have nothing to hide, and if this helps against terrorism and fraud and busts people on outstanding warrants, great.
If at the same time you're devaluing the dollar and creating an economic situation that you can't make it, and your families are hurting, then it becomes more of a police state mechanism for control of disgruntled populations, which is very much the case in India. So, yeah, there's two sides to that. Say, okay, I'm not doing anything illegal. Well, you're not now in the sense that you're getting by economically, but if you're not and you're starving and 3 billion people in the world live on less than $2 a day, it becomes a police state burden instead of having those people work and engage in economic activities that support us all. it becomes a repressive thing, and this is privatizing the world, and corporations that privatize the world, they want this kind of control. So they'll hire, you know, private mercenaries to control and protect their private property, and it creates almost a new feudalism in the world. Corporate feudalism, treating workers as if they're meaningless, totally controlling them like they're drones, and emerge and controlling private property, everything, water, air, land, all privately controlled. That's the ultimate agenda.
Well, I always say that if we don't start a popular resistance now, we might as well just thatch our roofs, admit we're peasants, and hope that the masters will treat us decently. I don't think there's much to say for the latter alternative. But one of the things, and Peter Phillips, you mentioned this at the beginning of the show, where, you know, I'm so behind the times, I thought Project Censored was still just at Sonoma State University where you teach. And yet you said it's at 22 other universities and colleges. I can't begin. I would spend the rest of our 2 or 3 minutes we have left naming all the colleges in the Detroit area and people listening around the country. So they people can hook
in. Any college can participate. Students can find independent news, evaluate it with professors. We'll post it on the Media Freedom website. This is an alternative news source. There's more news on the Project Censored site than in the New York Times daily. So we're really thinking that colleges is a place, they always have been, where the cutting edge of social change and democracy movements can occur, and news is one of the vital parts of that.
Well, I'll go over it just a little more. Say someone's listening from Eastern Michigan University or the University of Detroit, or I'm going to start to name them all. How would they say, you know, this makes a lot of sense. And I just went to projectcensored.org. Is there is media activism?
They can find independent news stories from anywhere in the world. Research them to see, you know, what they covered in the corporate media kind of thing, which is pretty straightforward, and then have a professor read it and who's a specialist in that subject area and say, yep, this is a valid news story. And if you get that kind of level, then we can post that story. Last year we had 324. This year we hope to have several hundred. We have St. Cloud up in Michigan participating, DePauw in Indiana, DePaul over in Chicago area, and universities spread throughout the country. And that is an agenda that we think can really grow and expand worldwide. We've got participation from Chile, Ecuador, Argentina, Spain, Germany, the Canary Islands, all over Canada. This is a growing movement of truth-telling. In a time of truth emergency, when the corporate media is not telling us what's going on, we have to inform ourselves. And I think in universities, that's exactly what they do. Is sort out facts and look at information, and then we have to make that available to the public worldwide.
And we only have about 30 seconds. And how is Project Censored funded?
Not very well.
But through sales,
we sell books. Yeah. You can buy our book online. We get small donations from probably 1,000 people, and it's coordinated now with Mickey Huff as the new director at Diablo Valley College. And most of us are professors, so we're, you know, contributing our time. The students do the work, and they're not paid, so we really have a budget of less than $100,000.
Well, if you want to be informed and not just manipulated, projectcensored.org is where to begin. The book is Censored 2011. My guest has been Peter Phillips. I'm Peter Werby, and if you put .com after my name, you'll get a link also to Project Censored. As usual, Peter Phillips, thanks for doing all the great work in media, and thanks for being on the broadcast.
Thanks very much, Peter. It was good to do it again.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with the energy-saving Wave Ventilation Unit. Wave Ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. The computerized Wave Ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty, no filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars a year in energy costs. One customer wrote,
I was stunned by the difference. I had a dehumidifier.
humidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. And now that smell is finally gone.
Wave can transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. Find out more about Wave ventilation right now.
For free information, go to goodairnow.com. That's goodairnow.com. Or call 1-866-324-9481. That's 1-866-324-9481.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronix Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed, as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronix Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronix Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe-clogging limescale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Limescale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove limescale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
The Riff.
Now's the time.
Now's the time to make a difference.
Now's the time to do what's right.
To help a family.
Now's the time to volunteer.
To make a commitment.
To make new friends.
To make dreams come true.
To help a child.
Now's the time to help Habitat for Humanity build hope and change lives with a family in your community or around the world.
Now's the time.
Now, more than ever, help build it.
Visit Habitat.org.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. You know, I could fill any number of shows by talking to our guest because he speaks so eloquently to issues about the environment and particularly nuclear power and its impact on everything from the environment to our economy to our mass psychology of living in a nuclearized society. His name is Harvey Wasserman. He's been on the Peter Werby Show any number of times before. He's been speaking to citizen and campus groups, to public rallies and corporate gatherings since the late 1960s. He's been involved in No Nukes concerts in the late 70s and also in 1994, where he spoke at Woodstock 2. He hosts the Solartopia Show on WVKOAM 1580 Air America in Columbus, Ohio. And he's appeared on Nightline Today, Lou Dobbs, All Things Considered, Democracy Now!, Charlie Rose, hundreds of local and syndicated talk shows throughout the world, and as I said, including this one. He's a senior advisor to Greenpeace USA and the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, and he's a senior editor of freepress.org, and he edits the nukefree.org website. And we're reaching him at his office in Bexley, Ohio. Harvey Wasserman, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Peter, it's great to be with you again, man.
How do you find time to do all this?
I type fast.
That's
I don't have to have a long commute. I live in a convenient community. But, you know, it's all tied together. The nuclear power is tied to issues of poverty and racism and social justice. And, you know, saving the environment is all tied with saving the economy. So, you know, it all works out in the end.
Well, you were very active in 2004 documenting how the Bush machine stole the election of that year in Ohio, in your home state. And we just had another election 6 years later, and a good friend of yours unfortunately lost, didn't he?
Well, which one? Which one, my good friend?
It's because I was hoping you'd bail me out. I can't.
John Hall
from Orleans, from the band Orleans.
Sorry. He was a congressman from upstate New York. He had two terms, and then they got rid of him. I blame a lot of it on Obama. I think Obama has turned out to be an empty corporate suit. Let's put it this way. We greatly overestimated him. He's really governed like a Republican and has failed to come through on any of his promises, really. And so I think the people who got him in office just didn't turn up. And that's what, you know, the so-called enthusiasm gap was a no vote on this guy. And I don't think the Democrats are going to get the White House again for a long, long time, because here in Ohio, the Republicans have swept through, and the Democrats were in power for 4 years here. They did nothing to reform the election process, and so our elections in Ohio are every bit as susceptible to being stolen as they were when the Democrats first came in 2006 rather, here in Ohio. So this is a catastrophe. The new governor here, John Kasich, is extremely aggressive, very, very reactionary. He has no tolerance for alternative energy or alternative points of view. And the mechanism for stealing elections in Ohio is every bit as intact as it was in 2004. I don't see the Democrats carrying Ohio for the foreseeable future, which means that they will not be electing a president. So I'm going to predict that Barack Obama is going to lose in 2012, and that we will have Republican presidents for a long, long time thereafter.
Well, the center to the left just stayed home. 39 million less voters that voted for Obama didn't turn out. And I think that's because there's a highly principled quality to the people that that wanted change, that authentically saw things had to be done differently in this country. Whereas those on the right, it doesn't matter what kind of exposés you make of their candidates, they just go out and vote for them enthusiastically. So I was thinking, even when you were being critical of President Obama, a criticism I share 100%, it has the effect of a lot of Democrats saying, you know what, why would I bother? So there's going to probably be a low turnout in the 2012 election as well.
Well, there'll be a low Democratic turnout.
Yeah, exactly.
The Republicans will be out, as you say. Of course, a lot of it depends on who the Republicans nominate. Bill Clinton got two free passes when he ran in 92. He had, what's his name?
Now you want me to bail you out. Yeah, right.
Ross Perot, who got, 17 million votes, most of which were taken away from George H.W. Bush. And then in 96, they nominated, God forbid, Bob Dole. I mean, one of the most unelectable people in history. And the only way Obama gets to win in 2012 is if they nominate somebody who's dead or somebody like Sarah Palin,
Mm-hmm.
I will guarantee you that the Democrats will not carry Ohio again until we have universally federally mandated paper ballots. But the Attorney General of the state of Ohio has the capability, the technical capability, to flip the any outcome in any statewide election in Ohio in less than 10 minutes with just a few keystrokes. And that's how the system's set up.
Well, my guest, I'm sorry, go finish. I want you to finish.
Anybody who thinks they won't do it is just, dreaming.
Harvey Wasserman is my guest, and actually we were going to talk about nuclear power and at least some good news. You can go to Harvey Wasserman's site, one of his many sites, either under his name or solartopia.org. There'll be a link on my website as well, Peter Werby. .com. And so in Vermont, though, some bastion of sanity, huh?
Yeah, they elected Vermont elected a governor who's committed to shutting the Vermont Yankee plant. Now, we had an interesting occurrence. I think it was 2 days ago. The same two nuclear plants, two separate nuclear plants, owned by the same company, were forced to shut within 1 hour of each other due to emergency situations. And I want to say, you know, there's all this huge debate, point by point, nuclear waste, you know, efficiency, radioactive fuel supply, which is an issue nobody talks about, but all these issues about nuclear power. The bottom line is that the nuclear renaissance has nothing to do with nuclear power. It's all about a financial scam for, you know, an industry that's dead or dying. And it's all about getting access to the public treasury for yet another mega corporate ripoff. In this case, they're just using the nuclear plants as a medium, you know, like Ponzi schemes and multi-level marketing operations. Often it doesn't matter what the product is. And so in this case, it doesn't really matter that these guys are pushing nuclear plants. They could be pushing the interstate highway system or you know, space probe or whatever. The bottom line is that they have an industry that they want to get access to the federal treasury. And so the nuclear renaissance is basically about government-funded loan guarantees, loans, that will be underwritten by the public. And so when these things go belly up, and they certainly will, the public will be stuck with another gigantic liability, like the SNLs and the home mortgages and all that stuff.
So this is already happening, though, and to some extent, right? Aren't people ratepayers having to pay up front in some cases for plants that haven't been built yet, haven't been started? And
right. In Georgia and in South Carolina, nuclear plants are being built where the ratepayers are already being forced to pay. And they will have to pay whether the plants go online or not. I mean, that's what the reality is.
Well, and you don't think they'll go online?
Highly unlikely.
How come?
That'll happen. I mean, I think that most of these plants are just going to go nowhere. They'll be out there a few years, they'll suck up $100 million per plant or a couple of $1 billion per plant. And then a few years out, you know, the renewables will have so vastly superseded the nuclear plants that they'll just have to stop. And that's what's going to happen.
Well, interestingly, Harvey Wasserman, I was just listening last night to Gil Scott-Heron and Brian Jackson's song, We Almost Lost Detroit, about the near meltdown at Fermi 1 back in then. Oh, yeah, that's a whole story. So you were the editor of the Michigan Daily, right?
I was the editorial director.
Yeah. And
we had an AP machine, and I was, you know, also the Time Magazine and UPI correspondent. And we never heard a word about the fact that the Fermi nuclear plant was on the brink of mass explosion.
What year was this now?
It was October 5th, 1966.
Okay.
And I was a senior at the U of M, and there was just this accident that happened at Fermi, and I did not find out about it until 1974, when I was reading this book, We Almost Lost Detroit, by John G. Fuller. And, you know, I'm reading this book about this meltdown of this nuclear plant, and I'm suddenly saying, geez, October 5th, 1967, I was there, I was 40 miles away, and here I'm reading about this, 8 years later. It was shocking. Very few people knew. But the Fermi nuclear plant could have exploded, and it really could have put a gigantic radioactive hole in southeastern Michigan, permanently destroyed most of the Great Lakes, killed millions of people in the Detroit area, and barely escaped it. And this is a reactor that could have exploded because it was cooled with liquid sodium. And when hot liquid sodium is exposed to air, it will explode.
Well, couldn't the pro-nuclear power people take that incident and use it to their benefit to say, well, you draw this incredible catastrophe that never occurred, and now we have Fermi 2 that was built, and that's just been going along quite jolly since. So, hey, we're doing pretty good, and your scare stories, Harvey Wasserman, never came true.
Well, I got to tell you that the book We Almost Lost Detroit, was published by in a really radical magazine called Reader's Digest, and John G. Fuller nailed it. And anybody who is interested can find this book and read it. Didn't come from me. But it will scare the bejesus out of you. And the severity of the accident that could have happened there is just almost beyond description. So what can I tell you? I mean, it did happen. Three Mile Island did happen. I went into central Pennsylvania in the year after the accident, and I interviewed dozens of people who were dead and dying, people and their families were dead, and the people I interviewed were dying from cancer, leukemia, birth defects, stillbirths, malformations, bad taste in their mouth, hair loss, sore open lesions. I mean, you name it. It was like being in Hiroshima. And so, you know, people can't tell me that there's any scare stories involved with nuclear power.
Hmm. Well, we were talking a little earlier about these two unplanned shutdowns at these nuclear plants in Vermont and New York yesterday. And, in fact, there was a small leak of radioactive water inside the plant. But it says that the company, Entergy, determined that the source of the leak was a 2-inch metal access plug on a pipe that was welded over in 1972. So that's a long time ago, and these machines that have to be run flawlessly, they're all aging, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. It's very dangerous. I mean, every reactor, including Fermi, by the way, Fermi 2, has massive leaks involving tritium because the underground piping is rotting. The concrete and the steel that's involved with these plants, as they've operated over the years, exposed to huge quantities of heat and radiation, it's just disintegrating. Concrete will disintegrate over time, especially when exposed to heat and radiation, and steel pipes get embrittled. And so if they're embrittled and then water happens to touch them, they will just shatter. And so all these nuclear plants are just accidents in the process of happening. They're not waiting to happen. They're happening as we speak. So, you know, when you have two reactors owned by the same company, which shut because of emergencies within an hour of each other, you know you're headed for trouble. Now, how many of us are – these plants opened in the 70s and 80s. So how many of us are driving 20-, 30-, 40-year-old cars?
Yeah, or how many people were alive that are listening or who weren't alive when those were built? Harvey Wasserman is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show, and you can go to his website, solartopia.org. It's the best place, really, to hook on to the work that Harvey's done over the years and how to contact him if you need a speaker. He speaks around the country frequently. He's a senior advisor to Greenpeace USA, among other things as well, and we're talking about nuclear power. Now, it's odd. We get in a situation here where there's a talk about a deficit reduction and the stopping of government expenditures and free market and all of that. Take away the free market, there never would have been a single nuclear plant built in this country. Am I correct?
Correct. The nuclear power industry is a total scam to suck out taxpayer money. Not a single nuclear plant would ever have been built without massive inputs from the federal government, financial, technological, and, of course, the blind eye on all the health and safety problems that come with it. I mean, you know, people like to say, well, there's been no evidence of anybody being harmed by nuclear plants. First of all, that's false, but the government does a really good job of not looking for any problems. So, and believe me, there are problems.
Well, and when you say about federal money, we're actually obviously talking about taxpayer money, and we have something, what's that called here? Let me look in your article, which, by the way, is in commondreams.org. It's called Vermont Votes No Nukes by Harvey Wasserman. It was published on Saturday, November 6th, and summarizes a lot of what we're talking about. Oh, yeah, subsidized loan guarantees that George W. Bush in 2005 set aside $18.5 billion in loan giveaways for new construction of nuclear plants. And, of course, we have this liberal president who must oppose nuclear power. Oh, wait a minute. No. He says that's a good idea. That'll take us off foreign oil. Hey, that's not a bad idea, is it?
Oh, he's just so bad. I mean, I can't stand the sight of Barack Obama now. And he has really just, you know, hurt us enormously. This whole election was a referendum on Barack Obama. And, you know, like I say, we severely overestimated him. he he is pro-nuclear. And I just read an article in one of the trade journals that, you know, going on about how Barack Obama has done more for the nuclear power industry in 2 years than George W. Bush did in 10, in 8. So, you know, But we will stop them. I mean, it all depends on government money. The nuclear power industry is just, you know, a scam to get their hands on the federal treasury. And that's what they intend to do. So we are just going to have to keep at it.
Well, let's say that, I mean, there's always a trade-off. Actually, I call it blackmail, but there's always a trade-off. You know, do you want jobs or do you want a clean environment? Do you want to keep depending on foreign oil and the wars we have to fight to ensure that supply, or do you want nuclear power with its downside? And when that's posed, do we want to keep shipping oil all over the world, which is so disastrous to the environment? And like I say, we have to fight wars, or nuclear power, which, a few people are going to get a few lesions and a few people are going to die, but ultimately it might be a devil's choice, except then when you come down to, they got this stuff called, what is it, waste. What the hell did you do with that?
Well, you don't. There's nothing to do with it. And, the big fight now is over, or a big fight is over Yucca Mountain with this waste dump in Nevada. I've been to Yucca Mountain. I've been in Yucca Mountain. It's a dormant volcano, and it's surrounded by dormant volcanoes. It has an earthquake fault going right through it. It is, massively expensive, completely failed, perched water. Everything about it is untenable. And other than that, there's no answer. And as we saw in New York Times and elsewhere, there are huge marches. I mean, huge marches in Germany now about opposing nuclear waste.
The transportation of it from from France to Germany, right?
There's nothing to do with it. There's no place to put it, and it's just not going to happen. So. This has just, gotten out of control.
Well, wait a minute. Here it says, after 3 days of protests and occasional violent clashes with the police, which means the police attacked the demonstrators, usually, train hauling 123 tons of nuclear waste finally arrived Monday in northern Germany. Why don't we send our waste to northern Germany? There's an idea.
Yeah, right. I mean, they won't take their own waste, let alone ours. So Nevada doesn't want it. It was this site in Nevada was chosen originally because they felt that the people in Nevada wouldn't notice, I guess, or wouldn't care, wouldn't have the clout to fight them. But they do, and they're winning. And the government is just in chaos over this. So there's really no solution. It's not the industry likes to say it's a political problem. It's not a political problem. It's a technical problem. There's just nothing to do with this stuff. They talk about recycling nuclear waste. That doesn't happen. It's a technology that doesn't work and will never work. So, this is an industry that jumped off a cliff and said, well, we'll solve the nuclear waste problem, soon. We'll create this nuclear waste and soon we'll have a solution. This was in 1957, 53 years ago. They're no closer now to a solution for the nuclear waste than there ever was. And other problems remain unsolved. Most significantly, of course, in the short term, is that the reactors can't, as you say, compete. They're totally dependent on subsidies from the taxpayer. They've got this loan guarantee program, and they're whining and moaning because they're being asked to put up a small amount of money as fees to handle handling charges for the loans, and the industry, the nuclear guys are just saying, oh, blah, 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 we have to reform the loan process. Whenever you hear a Republican or a corporate guy saying reform, it means they want to tear it apart.
And they want to deregulate something. Yeah. So
they want to just get their fingers, and their hands on the whatever the particular agenda item is they're talking about. It's always about getting federal money.
Well,
that's what it's always about.
The newly elected governor of Vermont has pledged to make the state to close down the Yankee nuclear plant. Think he'll do it? I mean, these guys always come in with big promises.
Well, he was elected to do this, and the legislature was for it. He was chairman of or president of the Senate, the Vermont Senate, when they did it. They voted against it. So I hope so, because, we've got until March of 2012, and as you well know, a lot can happen in a short period of time. And in that period of time, which is actually a lifetime in politics, as Bill Clinton used to say, 5 months is a lifetime in politics, and maybe it is. So we are going to have our job cut out for us in the next couple of years to keep the Vermont government's feet to the fire. But hopefully, you know, we'll succeed here, because shutting Vermont Yankee would be a big deal. I mean, these people are living under the gun. It's really bad. And they want that plant shut, and they need it shut.
Well, in order to get this nuclear waste from France into Germany, the government had to deploy about 20,000 police officers at a cost of about $70 million to make sure the shipment was undeterred. And it's interesting that so often the radical protest movements, the environmental movements of the past 30 or 40 years has been manned by almost by young people, by students. But this one, it had farmers out there blocking the road with sheep and goats and tractors, and it was 1,000 protesters were arrested. And Harvey Wasserman, you have a long history in the direct action movement against nuclear power. Were you involved at the demonstrations in Seabrook at New Hampshire?
Oh, yeah, it was so much fun. I mean, we had thousands of people marching against the nuclear plant there. And, you know, I'm sure the utility, which went into tremendous financial tailspin after building this plane, we had thousands of people arrested, and never an injury, by the way. We had two very intense years where several thousand people were arrested at Seabrook, and nobody was hurt. Hmm. And in fact, in the whole history of the anti-nuclear movement in this country, very, very few, if any, serious injuries. It's been a remarkable triumph for direct nonviolence and for the power of nonviolence, because we've had a huge impact in 1973. Richard Nixon said there'd be 1,000 nuclear plants in the U.S. by the year 2000, and that has come and gone, and there were only 103. So, and largely because of we prevented the industry from getting, you know, these huge subsidies. If they had gotten the huge subsidies from the government, then it would have been over, and they would have built the plants, but we've prevented that.
Well, we only have time for one more question. Sorry to interrupt you, but if the Democratic Party is dead, if these corporate conservatives are going to reign unrestricted, and we've got this nuclear waste that we can't get rid of, well, that doesn't seem like a very happy situation. Anything bring you hope?
I'm always hopeful. I've never found a real significant use for pessimism.
Okay.
And I think ultimately, I believe in one thing, which is that ultimately, the survival instinct will triumph over the profit motive. And so you got people out there who are going to profit, but sooner or later, the nuclear technology is a threat to our survival. It's as simple as that, and we cannot survive on this planet with continued use and spread of nuclear power. And so the human species will rise up and get rid of this technology. The question is, will they let the industry get to the trough and how significantly to get their build their plants with public money? Or will we be able to stop them and save at least part of our economic future? Because that's what it's ultimately about, is nuclear power is really just a theft machine for taking as much money out of the public pocket as possible.
Well, I want to thank you for being on the show. Harvey Wasserman, Solartopia, Our Green-Powered Earth, AD 2030, is now available for free download at solartopia.org. You can also link on to Harvey's site, harveywasserman.org or .com?
.com. harveywasserman.com, solartopia.org. And I also added a regular news blog on nuclear power called nukefree.org with Bonnie Raitt, Jackson Brown, and Graham Nash, nukefree.org. And we post all the breaking news there.
Old friends from the No Nukes Concert. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. There'll also be a link to all of this on my site, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. As always, Harvey Wasserman, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, you're the greatest, Peter. Thanks for having me on. Really honored.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're two payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
Is this on? Thank you. All right. Good morning, students. This is your principal speaking. Please listen closely to the following schedule changes. First period will be replaced by sleeping in. Second period will be replaced by warm weather. Third period will be replaced by belly flops. Fourth period will be replaced by goofing around. Fifth period will be replaced by batting leadoff. But there will be no changes to lunch. It will be in session every day.
School may be out for summer, but lunch is always in session. If your kids rely on subsidized school meals, call Gleaners Community Food Bank of Southeastern Michigan at 1-866-GLEANER or visit feedingamerica.org/summermeals.
A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
101.1 WRIF.
Hey, this is Lars from Metallica.
Hello, this is Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Hello, this is Brian Johnson of AC/DC. You're listening to Detroit's home of rock and roll, WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101, The Riff.
You ran for state office and was beaten. Started a business and failed. Ran for Congress and lost. But thankfully, Abraham Lincoln didn't give up. Perseverance. Pass it on. A message from the Foundation for a Better Life.
Music on 101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Ozzy Osbourne, February 12th at the Palace. Listen for your chance to beat the box office.
decision.